2IRJ and 2IRJ. Calling into Italy, Riddly, Jiddly, and 2IRJ in central New Jersey. This is WB4AIO calling your station and carefully tuning.
The frequencies in use by Mother Nature static.
No, that's not considered use. That's just like the breeze blowing by.
In that case, I'll be daring and put on my power at 4,000 Hertz bandwidth.
Okay, you're sounding good.
I'm very glad to hear that, and you are too.
I'm probably going to get a fiance telephone call pretty soon, though, because soon it will be time for her to go to bed, so I'll drop out when that happens, but I thought this would be a good time to do the test. Your fidelity sounds good. Have you initiated your higher mic gain and your higher bass control and your greater distance from the microphone? Is that what I'm listening to right now?
Indeed you are. I'm going to keep a key down for your AGC to recover, and then I'll unkey. And we'll test to find out if you can detect any background noise. In 10 seconds, I will unkey.
Well, I don't think I heard any. If there is any, it's below the ambient noise level at this location.
I keyed up after letting your AGC recover right now. Any click?
Yes, there was an audible click, but it was not particularly loud.
Okay, that's just fine. I'm happy with the progress here. I'm talking about 1.5 fists away from the microphone now. Oh, hell, wait a second. Now I should sound better. The bass is back. 12 o'clock position. I used to run it at about 7/8 of that counterclockwise, in other words, about 1/8 of an inch before 12 o'clock. But now, with the new system, I can run it back to your original setting of 12.
Oh, it sounds real nice and smooth right now. I like the way it sounds.
I suspected that you would.
It's got that round and full and fully packed sound that WEAF New York used to have in 1935.
Ha ha. Well, that predates me, even though I predate Joel Karsten, the author of the Straw Bale Garden book. I received an email from Jim Sayman, and it was a CC. He had written an email to Karsten. I have trouble saying that last name, remembering it. And so anyway, I wrote an email too, which I haven't launched yet, but I will do so tonight. For audio fidelity purposes only, I could read it to you. I was brief, as per your instructions.
Yeah, sure, go ahead. This is WB4AIO in the listening mode.
Here it goes. Hello, Joel. I had planned to write you the mother of emails, but for a succinct response, here's the hyperlink that you requested. As Jim Sayman had mentioned, the same can be found at 3950.net, Virgil. On the top right column, left click, SurvivalNet, -2014-0518. And I mimicked it, by the way, exactly how you posted there with a space between at the first hyphen there. Two spaces, actually. Continuing, after viewing my link site, I have launched a new plan. The result is a tidier link with salient details saved in metadata. This hyperlink has performed even in primitive locations, such as the Amazon jungle. Parentheses, I suppose that the character count is under 256, exclamation mark, end of parentheses. Indeed, we have so much in common, dot, 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 good microphones, and, quotation, Thursday child, end of quotes, status. Laugh out loud. My hatching was January 31st, 1957. Seriously, your interview was abundantly more refreshing and valuable than when I co-interviewed a United States presidential candidate. May your health and happiness continue. I embrace fresh frontiers armed with your blue Yeti microphone, exclamation mark. Sincerely, Martin J. Fennick, amateur radio station, N2IRJ. Net control station, the Liberty Network. Progeny facilitator, the Survival Net. Smiley face at the end. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Well, sounds like a good letter. That guy, I think he's related to the guy that used to host the Tonight Show on NBC, Johnny Carson.
Well, he has an extra K, and the first K should have been a C.
Well, the fidelity test is good. When you're further away from the mic, there's more of a room ambiance quality to your voice, but it's not unpleasant. You'll hear it in the recording. I'm recording this right now.
I expected that, and I can speak closer to the mic. It's just that when I get too close, you can hear my breathing. Here, let me try something. One moment. There. I turned off the reverberation so that you're able to distinguish between it and my room ambiance. Right now, the mute button is pressed on the reverberation. Over.
Yeah. The reverberation was so low that I don't think I was really noticing it, but the room ambiance, it's very subtle, but it is there when you're further away from the microphone.
Okay, I've ever so slightly gotten closer. I'm about a fist and a few fingers away.
Give me some more talk.
This is a mother flea calling to its young. I'll give you more talk. I'm about 1.5 fists away, and if the room ambiance isn't bad, I'm satisfied with this distance. It's much more comfortable. I actually feel claustrophobic in the face when I get too close to a microphone.
Whatever you're doing right now sounds really, really good, but when you were back a little further from it, it still sounded good. Just a little different.
That tells me what I need to know. By the way, you're reaching, even on the beverage at times, an S9. My noise floor is mostly 6 and sometimes 7 with the static.
Very good. I had an interesting experience. I was sitting in the backyard. It was a beautiful afternoon after the thunderstorm passed through. The sun was shining brightly, golden sunshine, beautiful dark gray and light gray clouds. Oh, there's my phone call. I'll be back after the phone call, if that's okay, WB4AIO.
How long will it be? Not that I'm rushing, I'm just curious.
Don't know. Half an hour at most.
Fine business. We'll be here. N2IRJ.
Thank you.
N2IRJWB4AIO.
This is N2IRJ.
How's life in Jackson, New Jersey?
Life is great. Took a fade there. Check your power.
Power, 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 power.
You're back in your robust configuration.
I think signals are a little down. It must be absorption or something. You're not quite 20 over 9, and the other night you were 30 over 9. That's more than a 10 dB difference.
Yes, it's a double-edged sword, static plus absorption.
When you talk, is the Duro meter reading correctly?
Looking at it right now, it certainly is. I'm in green range with about 3 bars of yellow, and the peak power is hitting the low range of the peak power zone. It's a yellow. There's no red. If I get closer like this, I'm filling it up a lot more. And if I go like this right up to the mic, I can just touch a part of red zone on average, but the peak is still not hitting red zone. Over.
Yeah, okay. It sounds like you're in a reasonable range. It did sound like there was more talk power when you got a little closer.
Well, in that case, I'm a little bit closer. I'm about one fist away. So I'm back to where I started, but I think I'll end up having more talk power. And I think that if I exercise enough, I won't breathe so heavily on the microphone. Should I say the microphonium?
Yeah, well, you're sounding good. You're sounding good at either distance. So I would regard this test as 100% successful.
For LibertyNet, single sideband, these are the settings I'll use. The companion is at 5 instead of the 4 where you set it. I used to use 3 to be extra conservative.
From the looks of my pan adapter, you're in the 4 kilohertz bandwidth right now, too.
That is correct. Hopefully you've been recording that, the 4KC. Have you?
I think the first few sentences you said when I started the recording were I was still in 3.4, but when I realized you were transmitting in 4, I switched my receive bandwidth also.
Boy, did I make a dumb mistake in recording the last midweek LibertyNet, having 4 kilohertz of bandwidth when nobody was occupying that and the static conditions were so high. If anything, I should have maybe narrowed it down to 3.1.
Yeah, maybe so. Extreme circumstances call for extreme measures.
Yes, indeed, it's a radical idea, but someone's got to do it. By the way, I'm thinking that if we go to true ESSB, I might reduce my companioning back to where you had it, 4 or even 3. But for more narrow banded network participation, if you say this sounds fine, I'll leave it at the current settings. I like them too. The CPDR meter goes almost to negative 30 decibels when I'm not talking. Yeah, I see it jiggling more around negative 25 because of the noise from the hard drives and the PC. But that's okay. I think yours is probably in the same location.
Let me take a look here. I've got a lot. I think I have more background noise than you do by a considerable degree right now. My heater is not on because it's been too warm. But the window is open, so I'm probably getting some noises of the night coming through. And, of course, the Clipperton LSD has its fan. The main computer has its fan. The The SDR's computer has its fan, and the SDR itself has its fan. A lot of fans going on there. Let me see what it is. When I talk, I'm peaking just a hair under 0 dB on the companion meter. Let me stop talking, but still transmit. Stand by, America. Looks like it's about 23, 24 dB on the negative side when I'm not talking. Over.
Yep, we're in the same place then. And through my experimentation, I discovered that it is indeed easy to make the CPDR blow past positive 3. So I'm set like you are, where it's not hitting the 0. It's getting close, but I still have a factor of safety. And by the way, my microphone is reset to your original setting of 25.
Very good. I guess you could run a Skype test just to see if any of the changes you've made have affected the RF profile in that department. This is WB4AIO.
I could. Would you like me to Skype you on your landline?
Well, you could just call the test lady. That would work fine, too.
Okay, let's do that and put it over the air. By the way, when you left before, a carrier came. It was about 39.93.8, and then it moved to 39.94, almost. And I heard a little whistling while you were talking there a few moments ago. Okay, Skype lady, where are you? Okay, here goes.
Hello, welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Hello, Skype lady. This is Marty, N2IRJ, Jax, New Jersey, United States. Audio test for the world. Hello, Skype lady. This is Marty, N2IRJ, Jax, New Jersey, United States. Audio test for the world.
If you are able to hear your own voice, then you have configured Skype correctly. If you hear this message, but not your own voice, then something is wrong with your audio recording settings. Please check your microphone and microphone settings, or visit Skype.com for more help. Thank you for using the Skype call testing service. Goodbye.
That concludes the test. Ever so slightly, I could hear a little bit of RF in my headset. Very, very minor. My guess is that it did not come over the air. Also, I'll have you know that the speakers were turned up loud, so you can let me know if that's a bad thing. It's nice to have them up so other people in the room can hear, but if it somehow works against me, please inform. Over.
WB4AIO. Boy, excuse me, my throat got clogged up there. It did work against you. I didn't hear any RF, but I heard a lot of speaker-to-mic kind of sound coming through your microphone. So try it again with the speakers turned way down or almost off, and see how it sounds just coming through the mixer directly. WB4AI.
Here goes.
Hello, welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Hello, Skype lady. This is Marty, N2IRJ, Jax, New Jersey, United States, and this is test number 2. I don't have background QRM anymore. Hello, Skype lady. This is Marty, N2IRJ, Jax, New Jersey, United States, and this is test number 2. I don't have background QRM anymore.
If you are able to hear your own voice, then you have configured Skype correctly. If you hear this message, but not your own voice, then something is wrong with your audio recording settings. Please check your microphone and microphone settings, or visit Skype.com for more help. Thank you for using the Skype call testing service. Goodbye.
In that case, I also muted my microphone when the Skype lady was talking, and I did not hear any RF in my headset. Imagine that.
Yeah, okay, that sounded better. There was no speaker-to-mic sound to it that time. WB4AIO.
I wonder if I put it really low, if Laura could still sit in here and listen to the Liberty Net, and it wouldn't interfere.
Well, try leaving your mic on this time. Don't spot down your mic. And have the speaker at a fairly low level, but still loud enough to where Laura could hear, you know, the back channel and over-the-air Skype conversation when it was present. And just try that as an experiment, but don't mute your mic this time. WB4AI.
Roger. Here is a middle-of-the-road solution, potentially.
Hello. Welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Test number 3 from N2IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey, United States. Background speakers are at mid-range instead of three-quarters. Test number 3 from N2IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey, United States. Background speakers are at mid-range instead of...
If you are able to hear your own voice, then you have configured Skype correctly. If you hear this message, but not your own voice, then something is wrong with your audio recording settings. Please check your microphone and microphone settings, or visit Skype.com for more help. Thank you for using the Skype call testing service. Goodbye.
Had she not rudely cut me off, I would have additionally stated that my microphone was open during the entire test. Back to you.
That was better. That was better. But it still had some of that speaker-to-mic sound. It would be acceptable. I guess you could use it at that level, but if it were me, I'd want it maybe. I'd cut it down to maybe half of that volume to the ear, where it's still understandable but kind of low, and probably it would be quite acceptable at that point. At this point, it's sort of in between where I want it and where it was before. It is better. You could probably live with it this way, but it's a little bit speaker-to-mic-y sounding. The other solution, of course, is for Laura to wear headphones. That would work too, and then you don't even have to have the speakers on at all.
Roger. We need to get those, well, I guess we don't have to necessarily get the microphone repaired on the Sennheiser if it's still possible to get that element, but we should. And then it'll be a headset we can count on. It might bother her trying to rest in the chair with headphones on, but we could do that. We could try that or in some other way. I think ideally she might like to rest in the bedroom and listen on that speaker, but as you know, not everything comes across there for her to hear, so she has resorted to streaming on her laptop over in the bedroom, but that has poor audio fidelity. I'll let you respond to this, and then I'll tell you about my next audio challenge.
Okay, well, I guess having her own set of headphones. She wouldn't have to use a headset microphone, though, unless she wanted to talk. Just for listening, she could use any pair of headphones that had the requisite plug. Those Sennheisers, those cheaper Sennheisers, the PC version, they would work fine for that purpose, although the microphone on them is not compatible with your mixer, but the headphone part is perfectly compatible with it. Go ahead.
Yes, this leads me to my second, and I have a third question, too. The second is, as you know, we're supposed to visit the extended family in the first half of June, and her father and family, I think, would enjoy hearing the Joel Karsten interview. Perhaps I could somehow load it onto her PC and then play it. The problem is, again, the damn poor speaker fidelity. I wonder if I could take along some kind of external speakers, maybe, and then they could hear it better. Her father, too, is getting deaf. He's 95. So I need all the help I can get.
Well, you could buy a set of computer speakers, you know, amplified speakers. You'd need access to, you know, 120 volt power to run them. And then you just plug the 3.5-inch plug into the headphone jack on the computers, and it'll play out of the computer speakers. That, you know, and there are many, many computer speakers out there of fair quality, and there are even a few of very, very good quality. I really like the ones I'm using in the ham shack here, for example, the Altec Lansing. They sound really, really nice, and they were not that expensive. There are some possibilities as for that. If somebody has hearing loss, though, headphones might be even better. And you know what? You already have headphones. You have a couple of pairs, at least, that I know of those Sennheiser PC-151s, the same ones I'm listening to you on right now.
Right. If I could find them. I don't know anymore. Yeah, that is an idea. Oh, and speaking of microphones of that genre, I did look up the Blue Yeti, spelled Y-E-T-I, and it is indeed a USB 2 device.
Yeah, they're becoming more and more common. There's a sound card built right into the microphone, and all it needs is access to the USB lines on your computer, and bingo, you have high-fidelity audio already in the digital domain. It's already digital as soon as it hits the computer.
Yes, my next comment is that the reason for downloading it onto her laptop is because way out in the West Virginia hills, her parents don't have internet, and they couldn't afford it anyway. So that's why I'd have to prepare it ahead of time and play it for them there. Otherwise, I could stream it.
Well, it's easy to put it on the computer. I mean, all you have to do is go to the website, 3950.net, right-click on that file, and tell the computer to save link as, and choose a location, a folder on the hard drive where you want to save it, where you can remember where it is. And once it's saved, bingo, you've got it. You can play it anytime.
Roger. You know, I had a third item, I think. Oh, yes, here it is. Yes, yes. We've discussed this before, and it's resurfaced, and that is, how do I play a YouTube to NISA? I think the answer is I can't. What I did lately, I turned up my external microphones, played the 1 minute clip, and she couldn't hear anything. No matter how I adjusted it, loud, quiet, or medium, she said at the very beginning there was just a poof, and that's it. She couldn't hear anything. So I'm figuring, okay, it's not going through the system. I think we already established that. The hardware. But why the hell wouldn't speaker to mic work? Because she's hearing my voice through the damn microphone, over.
Well, a Skype might have some weird algorithm so that any noise in the room that's also on the computer is considered to be her own voice. Even though it isn't, it's considered to be, because anything that's coming out of that speaker port, it's normally her voice, and so anything that comes out of the speaker port that is picked up by the microphone is recognized by Skype, perhaps, I'm just kidding here, is recognized by Skype, perhaps, as Nissa's own voice, and it cleverly uses some algorithm to cancel that out as much as possible. Probably the answer is just don't try to do that. Just forget it. Just send her a link and she can watch a YouTube thing herself, or send her, make an MP3 out of it and send her that.
As you might recall, she lives in the country too, and she freaks out over any lengthy download. In fact, she's probably freaking out right now over what Fred Stark sent in the past few days, those photographs. In fact, maybe she's still downloading them for all I know.
Yeah. Maybe so. I would say, doesn't she go to the library, though, sometimes, where she can watch YouTube videos and get, you know, faster speed? Just to send her the links. Don't send her the actual files. Just send her the links to the YouTube videos, and she can watch them there. But trying to feed them down the Skype pipeline, which is the same pipeline that her voice is coming out of, I think that's just not going to work. It's not, at least it's not going to work well. It will. The Skype itself will try to suppress that.
Yeah, she can hear MP3 direct cuts, and of course the Liberty Net. Maybe in the back of your mind, we could come up with someday a solution, some overriding way I could set controls or add additional wires to, so that I would be able to do that, and I could outsmart Skype's algorithm, bypass it.
But if you had two computers and fed it from a second computer?
Oh, I do, but that's complicated. Also, in the realm of complexities, I was thinking about your hosting the LibertyNet in early June, and I suppose it's not possible for you to hook in NISA. In theory, if you had my Yaesu phone patch, you could make a free telephone call from your landline and use the patch. But again, that might be too complicated, especially on short notice.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have time for planning for my trip and getting ahead on the radio programs and all the other things I need to get ahead on, and taking care of my girlfriend and taking care of things with my daughter, etc., etc., etc. And designing a telephone interface system. I don't think I'd use a commercial phone patch. If I was going to interface with a telephone, I'd get a good quality audio transformer, and I'd hook it up to the speaker of the speakerphone, and I'd feed the other end of it via balanced into a mic input on the mixer or a line input on the mixer. I think that's the way I'd do it. WB4AIO.
I'd like to have such a system here. It would allow more flexibility. Well, you know what I mean. An additional possibility. And I'm considering doing what you suggested, and that is doing away with my landline and ADSL from Verizon and just telling Optimum Online to give me what you have already, the VoIP telephone. And I think you said if we do it that way, I wouldn't have to design a separate patch like you described with the transformer. But if I do it, yeah, I do not want the Yaesu bandwidth limitation. And also, I think they also immediately convert it to semi-duplex. In other words, it's like speakerphone. And the pivot point is sort of controlled maybe internally or by a potentiometer somewhere, possibly on the control board. But, or, you know, but it's still, I don't like it. You know, with Skype, at least in theory, you could have full duplex.
Well, I don't think you'll be happy with whatever you do in the regular phone world. If you tap off the line itself, your own voice will be incredibly loud and will be louder than your caller, and it will have a very telephonic quality. If you tap off the headset, there is a hybrid in most telephones that cancels out most of the side tone, so that your voice would be maybe not quite as loud as the caller's voice, but there still would be considerable restricted, garbagey sounding side tone for your own voice if you tapped off the headset of a telephone. Whether it's VoIP or landline doesn't matter much. And if you tap off a speakerphone, then you eliminate the side tone. Then there's no side tone. It sounds a lot better. You only get the caller. But if you tap off the speakerphone, then it's not full duplex. So there you go. Those are your options.
N2IRJ, yes, I'm very satisfied with the system you've designed here, and I'm just asking to keep in your bag of tricks a solution for MP3 direct cut when it's playing back a Skype call. The level is still too low no matter what I do. You already identified that as being true, and I think you stated there really is no fix. But again, like I said, you can keep it in your bag of technical tricks.
Why do you want it louder?
Because it's so quiet compared to Audacity or any other setting. It's noticeably anemic. It's not able to really fully drive the speaker in the other room. I have to turn the volume up and it hisses, and it's just not up to our audio standards.
Well, just turn the volume on the Sony app. That should solve the problem right there.
Well, I stated already that if I do, I get more hiss.
Well, I guess you could manipulate the file and, like, raise the levels. MP3 Direct Cut lets you do that, but that just seems like way more trouble than it's worth. Just better to put up with a little hiss, I would think. It's just a telephone call.
Well, it could be a Skype communication where it would be worthwhile maintaining the full fidelity. What about this manipulation you speak of? Tell me more.
Well, I'll open up MP3 Direct Cut and I'll tell you the procedure here. Stand by, America. Okay, with MP3 Direct Cut, you go to Edit, Normalize. And then the program will go through a little procedure. A green bar will appear, and when the bar is completely green, then it will tell you how many dB of level change are possible to bring the highest peak on the recording up to full level. Then you click OK, and after you click OK, it will actually change the volume level of the file, and then you can listen to it at an increased volume level. However, if you don't go to File, Save Complete Audio, then the changes won't be saved, but you still will be able to listen to it at increased volume, and maybe you don't really need to save the changes, but there you go. You can change the level of the recording itself, not just changing a volume slider, but you can actually change the level of the recording itself in MP3 Direct Cut, and that works very well.
That's on a per-recording basis, though. I was looking for a permanent solution so that I could just move the slider and adjust the volume to where I wanted it to be.
Well, you say it's already all the way up, and all your other levels on the computer, including the master gain, are all set up, so everything's working perfectly. The only way to make it higher is to change the master volume setting on your master mixer in Windows 7. If you turn that up, then everything's going to be much louder. You'll be clipping like crazy, and you'll have to adjust every other source down to compensate. That sounds like more work than just changing the individual recording when it's too low for you.
I tried to follow your original instructions, but I couldn't get MP3 Direct Cut to come up. I mean, it was already up, but there were the individual recordings. I didn't know that you wanted me to perhaps experiment with increasing the amplitudes on one of them. So I brought up MP3 Direct Cut again, and now I can see the file, edit, special, list, settings. Could you explain that, and I'll go through the procedure. I just won't hit it. It's a blank recording, and it hasn't started any recording. Maybe it won't even let me, unless I record something first. I don't know.
Well, here's what you do. First, open MP3 Direct Cut and bring up one of those Skype recordings. Bring it up right now. One of those that's too low, WB4A Audio.
Okay, I have. Proceed, and I will increase the volume of it.
Well, first play it and through and listen for yourself to hear how weak it is, just so you have a ballpark idea in your brain of how low the level is. Just pray. You can play 5 seconds of it.
Okay. It's this one. I realize that I don't have to make it louder, but I can, for educational purposes only, and then just cut back the volume on the slider.
Well, it would be better to do it with one of the Skype ones, since those are the ones that really need to be changed. I wouldn't mess with that one.
Yes, but like I said, it's for educational purposes only.
Yeah, but you use that one every day, or not every day, but every week, sometimes more than once a week. So I don't know. What if you accidentally saved it at the higher level?
Well, I'd simply move back the volume control, perhaps to halfway.
Okay, well, if you really want to mess with it, I hate to mess with things that are working perfectly. I hate to do that because then you end up working way longer. It's better to take one of the things that actually needs to have its level increased and increase that. And plus, I don't know how well this works on a sine wave. But anyway, if you insist, I'll tell you how to do it.
We'll give it a try. After all, history repeats itself. I go outside the box, and then when the world explodes, you reverse the velocity vectors and bring me back to be inside the box. By the way, the Henry Etta modulate went nice up nicely power-wise, so that CW should have been, you know, pretty decent on your end. How was it?
Yeah, well, that's another reason not to experiment with it, because it's at a perfect level right now.
I know, but there's a thing called a volume control, and unless it moves on me without my consultation, all will be right. And I will say this, even with your modifications here, overnight usually my volume controls go back to either halfway on the bottom right window setting, or they go down to almost zero. And it's okay, I'm used to that now and I can fix it. I will say this though, the SDR screen still has not gone to a double or triple image, and there's no graying out. I mean, it's beautiful. You, I believe, totally fixed that problem.
Well, I hope so. Well, that's another reason, though, not to mess with this CW recording, because, you know, when you bring up MP3 Direct Cut, apparently it just comes right up at an appropriate volume level. If you change the volume level of this file, you'll have to mess with that slider every time and not know how close it is to what it should be. I don't know. Just, I want to prove to you it'll fix the Skype problem.
Are you advocating that it defaults to maximum on the slider in MP3 Direct Cut?
I don't know what it defaults to, but apparently whatever it's been defaulting to is appropriate for your needs, and so that's a good situation.
Well, I put it at maximum because it was necessary. I normally don't like to have to do that. I just checked my mixer on the bottom right, and MP3 Direct Cut is set to maximum already.
Don't know if you have multiple MP3 direct cuts up, if you change the slider on one of them, do they all change in volume? Now, maybe the sliders don't visually move, but does it change the volume on all of them? I kind of wonder. I suspect that it does.
Okay, here's what we'll do. I'll bring up phasers. No harm can be done there. We have it on CD and everything, and we could reinstall it even if we had to. What the hell? It's reading 198:50:30.939 seconds. How could it be 198? It's not that. Let me hit stop. It's still there. Wonder what that means. Let me hit play. It doesn't play. It's sort of frozen up and screwed up. How about that? Let me try infinity. Well, that works. Yeah, that works. It's about a negative 12 dB. I could increase it to, say, negative 6 dB. And then I'll just crank back the volume control. What did it sound like over there? I forgot to look at the power meter. I think phasers... Let me try again. Oh, wow. Good God. Phasers actually peg my power meter and the plate amps. It's higher than even on FM.
Well, it's a high average power waveform. Anyway, why don't you, that's really, you need a voice waveform. You need the one that has the problem. Just bring up one of those Skype conversations and we'll do that.
I think they're in that file I don't know about, but I think it's under Skype call and then documents or something. It's pretty simple. Well, let's see here. I'm looking to see if anything is up. Oh, yeah, I do have it here. There are many calls I could try to increase. Okay, I'll pick one. Well, it's not all that easy. How about, there was one to compact cars. That would be a doable one. I'm trying. I don't see it here though. Water company. I could maybe just do that one, even though that's not ideal. I don't think it was a big deal. I can't find when I called to get my car fixed. Oh, actually, you know what? It's already up, apparently. Let me look. yeah, here it is. No, excuse me. I'm sorry. Sorry to give you phasers. By the way, could you hear me talking at all when I was shooting phasers? I tried to talk at the same time. You may or may not have heard me.
Yes, I hear you just fine through the phasers.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, that means I must be even modulating up to their level.
The magic of audio processing takes care of it all.
I'm not kidding you. It actually pegged the power meter. And my plate current was 1.4 amps. Imagine that.
And the peak power when you're talking is exactly the same.
Yep, you educated me. Okay. Still looking. Sorry, it's taking so long. I guess I'll just try to pick anything. Well, okay, how about Optimum Online Tech? I'll get the operator. I'll bring that one up. It says, it already exists. Do you want to replace it? I guess I'll hit set, say no. So it's already up. Apparently it's in my taskbar. I'm looking. Let's find out what this one is. I don't know what it is. Oh, damn it, phasers keep coming up again. Why do they do that? I'm clicking on something else. I keep getting phasers. What the hell is going on here? I'm keyed down. That's another thing we need to do. Set up my Vox so that at times like this, I can talk to you and not have it keyed down in case you want to butt in.
You have too many windows open, Marty.
Yeah, you're right. Let me play this one back channel, the beginning, and we'll see. Maybe I can increase this one. We'll see. Hold on one moment.
WB4AIO for ID.
Okay, It's a NISA back channel, so I'll try improving it. I'm all ears.
Okay, first I want you to just listen to 5 or 10 seconds of it. It doesn't have to be over the air, although it can be. Just listen to 5 or 10 seconds of it, just to get a feel for how loud it is with your current speaker setting.
Okay, the ringing goes up to -6 decibels, and this is voices at -12. So we probably shouldn't increase it more than 3 dB. Again, it's for the understanding more than trying to necessarily increase it for practical reasons.
Okay, here's how you set it so it can be at the maximum possible level. In MP3 Direct Cut, go to Edit, and after you click on Edit, a drop-down menu will come to the fore, and near the bottom of the drop-down menu is Normalize. Just hit Normalize, and then the a box will appear, and the green bar will eventually complete it, become completely green, and at that point you'll see two findings. It will tell you what the peak is, and it will tell you what the level change possible is for the file. And the level change will be how many dB is able to be increased before it hits a digital zero. And then you just click OK, and it will change the level. After you do that, then listen to the file again. It should be noticeably louder, unless there's some errant peak that's already at 100%, of course, then that would prevent it from getting any louder. WB4AIO.
Apparently that is the case. This is N2IRJ. It states, seeking maximum gain. This can take a while because the data must be internally decoded. Note, ACM is faster than MPGLB.DLL. The bar graph in green has long ago progressed to the right to the maximum degree. It's fully filled green. I see the left decibel scale going from -24 up to +48. It's currently set at zero. On the right side, it says peak found is 0.00 decibels. Level change, 0.0 dB. So it seems like I can't increase this one without going over digital zero somewhere.
That's correct. The highest peak on that recording is already a digital zero, therefore you can't increase the gain. It's already as loud can be.
Well, then some of my other recordings must be louder than loud. And they're still dancing around digital zero somehow because they're so much louder. I mean, we could play Orban or any of those other ones, CBS, you know, loudness tests, I guess.
Well, there's no need to do that. The reason is just that the audio is unprocessed going into the Skype recorder. It's not peak limited and tightly controlled like it is coming out of the receiver with the receiver's AGC. It's also not tightly controlled like the levels of your audio on the Audacity recordings with the peak limiter and all that. It's just all over the place. There'll be an occasional high peak when somebody talks really loud or somebody drops something. And then the voices are like way below that. And the only way to get around this is for you to turn your speaker volume up, which is the preferred method, and just put up with the little hiss that you hear. Or if you really don't like that, then you can rebalance everything in your computer, rebalance all the levels of all the audio sources, and make it so that the master gain is higher and the individual sliders for the individual sources are lower, and that will give you potential for more gain to bring up weak sounds. So there you go. Those are your alternatives. My solution would be just to turn the speakers up louder when you play these Skype recordings. You're probably hardly ever going to play them anyway, so it's really not worth rebalancing all the audio levels in your system just to make your ears happy for Skype recordings.
Roger, well, I like to invent problems. So here's what I did. I brought back up my CW ID, and it is allowing us to make change, I think. Here's what it says. Left slider is above zero, unlike the other one that was at zero, dB. Peak found, negative 14.00 dB. Level change, plus 13.5 dB. So it sounds like there is opportunity here. Over.
Yeah, because the Skype call already has high levels going up to zero, whereas the other one, which I've created purposely, is at a lower level.
Well, I won't be an idiot. In fact, I could even test it with you tonight. And let's increase it 3 dB or something. How would I do that?
Well, you do it with that slider.
And that will change the numbers on the right side?
It'll change the level. I guess it changed. I don't think it changes the numbers on the right side. It just changes its own setting.
Okay, it did change the numbers on the right side, at least one of them. Peak found still shows negative 14 dB, but the level change is now positive 22.5 dB. I haven't hit OK yet.
Oh, that's gonna clip like crazy. You don't want to set it to plus 22.5. Good night. You can't set it any higher than the normalized function already set it. It has to be lower than that. Otherwise, you'll clip.
You mean the peak? I can't go above that. Here's what I did. I think it was at a negative 12, was it? 0.5? I put it up to positive 15. That's just a little bit more. Wait a minute, not positive 15. I'll have to go less than that if it was a negative. I can't remember now. What was it? Do you remember?
Cancel. Just hit the cancel button and do the normalized function again. Then I can tell you.
I did it, and I think I'll be okay. Here's what it is. The level change is positive 13.5 dB. So by my putting it up to 15, that shouldn't hurt much.
No, you're wrong. That's exactly what you can't do.
Could I? Okay, explain.
When you go hit the cancel button again, when you go through the normalized function, the factor that it says under level change, you can't go above that. That is the level change that will take the existing audio up to a digital zero. You cannot possibly go higher than that unless you want gross distortion.
So, I can't change anything, not even a smidgen? The only thing I could do is tone it down? I mean, not tone, but you know what I mean, amplitude-wise?
No, you're not understanding. The level change that is shown when you start the normalize function is the level change that will automatically be done if you hit OK after you go through the normalize procedure. In other words, if it says plus 13 and you hit OK, it's going to increase the gain of the whole file 13 dB, which is exactly what it would take to get it up to the maximum possible distortion-free level. That's what that means. If you go above that, if you turn the slider to more than that amount of level change, then you'll be adding even more gain and you'll be beyond digital zero.
Now I understand. I need to slide it back to, say, 3 dB positive. That shouldn't harm me, right?
Correct. That would be 3 dB higher than the level is now, correct?
Well, I'm going to ask, why did it initially show level change of, I think it was positive 13.5? What is the relevance of that? Where did that come from?
Because that is what normalization is. Normalization is changing the gain of the entire file so that the highest peak is just barely a digital zero.
Well, how do I know how much I could increase the level before I started flirting with danger at digital zero?
Well, all you have to do that, you don't have to touch the slider at all. If you want to go as high as you can without hitting a digital zero, all you do is go to Edit, Normalize, and then after it goes through its little bar thing, then just hit OK, and it'll automatically do exactly what you want. That's what normalization is.
I understand. I'm ready to hit OK, if it's OK.
Well, what did you do? Did you change it to plus 3, or did you leave it at plus 13?
I changed it to plus 3.0.
Okay, well, that will increase the level by exactly 3 dB from what it was originally, and probably you'll be hard-pressed to tell the difference. 3 dB is not much.
Yeah, well, I could make it 6.
Well, I don't think you should change it at all.
Here, I'm at positive 6.0 dB. I'll hit OK, and then I'll knock back my slider, and life should be good. I will look at the rightmost vertical decibel indicator and make sure that I'm not getting too close to digital zero. Is that digital zero, by the way, or is that analog zero, the right to the left and right channel on MP3 direct cut?
There's no such thing as analog when you're looking at a digital audio program. There's no analog is involved.
Oh, I suppose that's why I don't see anything above 0 dB then. Okay. Well, hold on to your seat. I'm going to hit OK. Since we know how much it was increased, we can always knock it back 6 dB. Okay, here's what I predict, that it will be too high, and we'll test that. Let's first test it at half volume. I'll look at the rightmost graphs when the CWID plays. Here goes. Okay, it's a little stronger than negative 12. Let me put the volume up all the way and replay it. I wonder if you could tell any difference the second time. It should have been louder.
Yes, it was.
Was it bad? Let me try something. I need to look at my indicator to see if it changed. Here goes. I could be mistaken, but it looks like it's not going any higher than what it was, like a negative 10 dB maybe. Maybe it doesn't show up on the graph there, it's simply louder.
The volume slider has no effect on the graph at all, none whatsoever.
Then how do you know if you're clipping or getting into danger zone? By going through the normalization and seeing what the facts and figures are there?
Well, you already did that, so you know whether you set it for clipping or not.
Okay. For now, I'll leave it here. Would you like me to put the slider back to the halfway point like I did in the first transmission, or is it okay where it is now at the added 6 decibels?
I don't like it louder. I like it back at the original setting because otherwise it's hitting the processing too hard and it doesn't sound as clean and nice.
Okay. Next LibertyNet, I'll try it at 3/4 then. Does that sound reasonable?
Well, you already raised the level. I would keep the slider back at its, I don't know, it's hard to say. You'll have to play it by ear. That's why I didn't want to change this, frankly, because everything was perfect.
I know. Well, how did it sound when I had it at half, the slider range?
I can't really tell until I hear it. You know, it sounded fine. But I can't really say until I hear it in action, you talking and Nissa talking, to get a feel for the relative level. See, that's another reason I didn't want to change it. It's kind of a sensitive thing. It's a psychological effect. It should be loud enough not to interfere with the flowing conversation so people can talk right through it, and yet it should be loud enough so that it's copyable, even no matter how loud the caller talks.
Yes, we had it set for good taste. What a reasonable man would like. Of course, the FCC is filled with some unreasonable men. In their rules, they want the CWID to be a certain number of dBs above the level, I don't know if it's peak or average or what, of the intelligence being spoken, I think. I remember reading something like that, or maybe it's allowed to be slightly less, but not too many decibels less. So, technically, I guess some people would feel that, you know, minutiae should be followed. I don't know what the numbers are. Over.
I don't think those numbers apply to anything except VHF, so I think we're just winging it on HF. As long as it's audible and copyable, I think it's acceptable.
Yes, yes, VHF, you're right. That's exactly where I'm coming from. It had to do with the police radios I used to use and the setting there. That's where it came to my attention. Although I did think of it years earlier when I used to deal with JM Communications in Johnstown. I think two of the guys there who have first-class radio telephone licenses and deal with it every day know the answer. I could find it out if I really wanted to. For FM. I guess maybe it might even be defined in terms of deviation or something.
That may be true. I'm not familiar with all that stuff, but I did read it a long time ago. I've just forgotten most of it, but as I recall, those rules only applied to repeaters, and VHF stuff had nothing to do with HF.
Yes, back in my 2 meter and 1 1/4 and 70 centimeter days and even 70 centimeter days when the World Trade Center still existed, you know, 1296 megacycles. Yeah, that's it, yeah. And we're at essentially 1.3 gigahertz. The CWIDs ranged from being barely audible to blaring so badly on top of the speaking individual that it was obscene. I, for one, had class, and had I been the operator of those repeaters, I would have made sure that integrity was maintained. I had that on my machine, but I had someone else do it. They made it a little bit louder than what I wanted. They wanted it to have the supremacy. This is really enjoyable, to finally be able to talk without having to make compromises. I've been waiting for this day since I was a little kid talking on CB. Back when I used to have to close talk the mic and shout and scream, and then, as you know, during the years of the overdriven Henrietta with the SGC cube, it kept kicking offline, and I had to modulate my voice in certain ways and continue. I couldn't have inflections. God forbid I'd kick offline and have to do a reset, and I'd test Vic's patience. N2IRJ.
Marty, well, I'm glad I could help you with this, and I recorded the beginning part of our QSO. We can maybe sometime tomorrow I can send it to you, although tomorrow's going to be an ultra-busy day. Don't expect any phone calls from me. I have to write like crazy and record like crazy, so you're really busy. Anyway, I'm glad we were able to do this test. Your station seems to be operating pretty much flawlessly. And everything is functioning exactly as it should, so more power to you. N2IRJ in Central New Jersey. This is WB4AIO. I guess I'll be saying 73. I'll listen for anything else you might have briefly, but I do need to get out of here. That alarm's going to go off in 5 hours.
You erred by wishing more power to me. I accept. It's now your job to increase my signal by 10 dB.
Oh, that's easy to do. We just need to add several more 4400s or something to it.
Hey, how come you didn't record the whole thing, as the commercial used to say? Mikey.
Oh, I don't know. Once we got into the discussion of pressing this button, press that button, I figured that we were long past the point of adjusting the audio for making sure you didn't have RF and making sure that everything was working. We were just diddling around with that CW level. So I didn't think we needed to send a long file, and I didn't think you needed to hear all that again and again. I know how you are. You listen to it over and over again. So less torture for you.
That is true, although I would have liked to hear my CW. In fact, let me try this. Let me try talking over my CW. I know this isn't equivalent to a NISA phone call, but maybe it will tell you something. Yes, this is N2IRJ competing with my CW ID. Over.
No competition. It sounds fine. The CW is totally copyable, and your voice is also copyable, so it's in the ballpark.
Roger. In that case, you served me well. Thanks. It was really a nice cue, so I appreciate it. And I'll let you hit the hay.
I heard somebody in the background say no competition. Does someone want to join the QSO?
Kilo Delta 8 Alpha Sierra Echo over here in Northeast Ohio. Good evening, fellas.
Hey, good evening. Over to you, Kevin.
Very good. My name is Kevin. I'm located in western Pennsylvania in the Allegheny Mountains near Beaverdale, which is about 66.6 miles east of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And here in the mountains, it's a cool evening, and you're about 10 over 9 on an SDR 1000, so you're sounding real nice. I'm going to be getting out of here because it's really late for me, but thanks for chiming in. Back over to you, Marty.
Okay, I hear Vic in there too. Hello, W1WCR. I don't think your tube amplifier is warmed up yet, though. You're a mother, what's the term, Kevin? A mother, not a tick. A mother or something calling to her young. What is it, Kevin?
A mother flea calling to her young. That's what a weak signal is like.
Yes, Vic, you're a mother flea calling to her young. Let me pass it over to KD8AS, see if that's correct. The name here is Marty. What is your name?
Alrighty. KD8AS. Name is Brian. Bravo Romeo. India Alpha November. Right up in the northeast corner of the Buckeye. Right on the Lake Bendy line in Salvador, Lake Erie. Beaverdale, huh? Man, it's been a long time since I've been through there. Long, long time. Of course, it's been a long time since I've gone. So, at any rate, yeah, absolutely no competition with the CW identifier. Sounds to me like it's working pretty well. Just exactly the way it's supposed to be. So, this is a Kenwood 440. Doing 100 watts. We got a slightly emergency HD dipole. And actually, the audio report. Good deal. Signal report. So, I'll let you guys get back to it. I just figured I'd jump in there and give you my 2.5 cents worth. So, back to, let's see, that other guy was W1, the W1 call. I didn't catch it all there. So go ahead, and I'll be clear and listening.
Before?
W1 WCR amplifier just clicked in. Good evening to everybody from W1 WCR. The name here is Vic, incidentally, for Brian's information there. I just wanted to make a comment on the CW identification signal. I find that to be one of the most obnoxious things that I've ever encountered. It's you're listening to someone discussing a very serious subject, and then suddenly that thing blasts in and screws it all up. It's really so unnecessary. Why can't it be reduced by maybe another 15 dB or so?
That's fine by me. That's how I think it's tasteful. And as well, oh, I just want to ask Brian quickly before you go, is your suffix ASE, Alpha Zero Echo? Because if so, years ago I had to pass ASE test, Automotive Service Excellence. I did all eight plus the ninth one, Advanced Auto something. It's the one involving mission control. Over.
Affirmative. That is, now I call it Amateur Service Excellence. Go ahead.
Okay, have you ever heard of the other one if you're in the car industry?
Oh, yeah. I've been a mechanic since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and since I lost my sight, I'm still a mechanic, so that's how it goes, man. But, there you go. I'll put the air hang on.
Oh, so you faced those nice ASE tests as well, possibly. Yeah, it destroyed two good nights of my time having to deal with it. And like I said, I did the Advanced Engine Specialist, or whatever it's called, the ninth one. Okay, Brian, I'll let you go, and then I'll go back to Vic.
Roger, 73, guys. Right in there. It's on the dark street, but, everybody's got their own case. 88 ASE,
you'll be glad. Nice to meet you, Brian, and hi, Vic.
Hi, Kevin.
You have a gigantic signal into western Pennsylvania. My God, 35 over 9. Very seldom see signals that strong.
Yes, you're doing extremely well out here, too. It's enough to quiet the noise.
Excellent. You seem to show up right around my bedtime every time.
Yes, I usually get on around midnight.
I was hoping you would come by, and I'm really happy to have you here. Let me reduce the CW, and I'll talk, and we'll see if my voice comes over well enough, and it's still aesthetically pleasing to W1WCR. This is N2IRJ.
Okay, very good. We can run a test. I don't think it really matters to do that type of an ID. People at the FCC can't copy CW.
Yeah, especially on 56 meters, where it used to be illegal. That's the, 5 megahertz area, kind of?
You've got to remember, though, Vic, that Marty talks for a long time sometimes, and if it's over 10 minutes, then he misses an ID. He needs some kind of ID running, or at least something that, like, I don't know, drops a rock on his head or something every 9 minutes or so.
Yes, I like subliminal IDs.
Oh, then you would like the Burger King commercial from 1974, where during the fade-out they say, "Eat at Burger King." But they slurred enough so it's more subliminal rather than in your face, because that might be offensive. It is offensive to me, by the way. I don't want to be told to eat in any particular place.
Yes, I think a typical subliminal ID would be CW at about 200 words per minute and down about 30 dB from the peak signals.
Well, I'll work on that. The FCC rule is a maximum of 20 words per minute. Here goes with my CW ID, and I'll talk over it, and then you can evaluate. This is much lower than I would normally use on a real Liberty Net.
Yes, that was good.
I think it was way too low. It was uncopyable to me.
Okay, let's try it here. I'm now testing it at about the midpoint. And again, it's much lower than a normal Liberty Net.
That's too loud up here.
I think that's okay. I guess Vic and I are hearing things very differently.
Okay, just for fun's sake, I'll put it at 1/3. Here goes. This is N2IRJ with the Great Liberty Network.
certainly much, much better than the usual on the Liberty Net.
Kevin, what do you think? Is it not loud enough?
But still a little hard to copy when you're talking. When you didn't talk, of course, it was perfectly clear.
Yeah, Vic, it's not that I like it, but I know that we're under scrutiny from the regime in Washington, so I cover every base. Not only is it a 10-minute CWID, it's actually set for 9 minutes. So nobody from the Bureau can argue that I was breaking rules.
No wonder I get irritated. I sort of figured that it was not 10 minutes because it interrupted so frequently.
We could set it for 9 minutes 59 seconds.
Yes, why not 9 minutes and 59 seconds?
Yeah, that's what I said. Well, or 9 minutes 59.9 seconds even.
Yes, why not?
I have my own ID here.
Transmitting from the tropical wonderland of western Pennsylvania, this is radio station WB4AIO.
Wow, that was really nice.
It is pretty. I admit it even exceeds my pretty CW. Also, speaking of good things, Kevin, why don't you tell him about Don Pardo?
Oh, I don't know. Vic's not a big TV watcher. He probably doesn't even know who Don Pardo is. He's a game show announcer, and there's one of the AMers down around 3885 who works in New York network television, and he actually got Don Pardo to record an ID for his ham radio station.
Well, that's novel. I don't know who the guy is since I don't watch the TV.
Yeah, I don't either, but it goes back to my childhood, kind of. I don't even know if he's still alive. Maybe Kevin could do an imitation. He used to. I'll try, but it's something like, "This is Don Pardo, and you're watching some TV program."
That was pretty bad, Marty.
I know.
Well, I get the idea.
Yeah, it's one of those announcer's voice that flips and flops and... Over to you, Kevin.
All right. Yeah, I got a friend of mine to record a bunch of IDs. I've got about 15 different ones.
You see, I could do that too, possibly, but it would interfere with Nyssa's and other people's voices. So that's why it's back to this CWID to please... Fox Charlie Charlie.
Well, there is a way around that, but first I want to show Vic I've actually got this recording, too.
Calling W1WCR. Calling W1WCR. This is WB4AIO.
What do you think
calling
of that?
And listening.
Calling and listening.
Wow, that's really enticing.
I thought you might like that one.
I wonder what the FCC thinks of that.
I don't know. Just a voice recording, perfectly legal.
Yes, I would think so.
The way around it, Marty, would be to have a voice ID that was extremely restricted in bandwidth, like really super narrow telephone quality, and have it a little bit louder than the voice that's talking over the air normally, like Nyssa or your own voice, and have it very brief, so that even though it was louder, you only lose a syllable or two. You'd say, "Into IRJ," really fast, with a voice, and very restricted. And because it's very restricted, more restricted than the actual voice you're trying to transmit, the brain could probably decode both of them at the same time. And since it's so brief, you wouldn't lose much audio. That's my solution that would not require CW.
Well, that's what they do on the broadcast band when they have some special offer on the broadcast band. They have some guy read at a rate that's about 10 times normal.
I agree with your solution, Kevin. I remember 13Q out of Pittsburgh used to do it. 99% of the time, they identified as such. They were around 1,300 on the AM band, killer cycles, and they would, at the hour, say, this is WKTQ. Although they said, it'd go, this is WKTQ. You know, super fast. And then the rest of the time, they would casually and leisurely say, this is 13Q, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, if you like, I'll make you such a recording and you can try it out.
Okay.
That's right. And
I really get the impression that Vic hates that CW. And we don't want to hurt Vic's tender eardrums, for God's sake.
Double, what did you say, Vic?
I say the FCC has already set the precedent on the broadcast ban.
Yes. And what did you say in the beginning, Kevin?
Oh, I just said that I get the distinct impression that Vic really hates the CWID, so we've got to try some alternative or we'll offend his sensitive eardrums.
Yeah, it turns out long ago Vic and I talked about CW in general, and unlike me, Vic has had his fill. He doesn't like having people check into the Liberty Net with CW. I always thought it was fine, and I would just decode it and tell the people, oh, the CW says blah, blah, blah. And what is your comment on that, Vic?
Well, I don't tremendously object to having someone check in on CW, except that most people can't understand it or copy it. So it automatically disenfranchises a lot of the listeners.
Especially these days. Although it is nice when it comes through when the voice can't. One example is N7ANL, I think, in Idaho. The only problem is he knocked his power back from like 100 watts to 1 watt, and the CW wasn't really any stronger than his voice. I wish he would have kept the power up.
Yes, it's sort of silly to run low power like that on this band, especially in the summer.
Indeed. We had that problem yesterday with the Midweek Liberty Net. I don't think a single person had amplification, and the static levels were tremendous. Kevin and I, we compared recordings, and we ended up going with mine, but even mine couldn't perfectly capture everything to the degree of fidelity that we wanted. Maybe I should say signal-to-noise ratio.
Super antenna, or else get an amplifier of some kind.
I agree. I preach it day and night to the net participants. I would like it to be like in the good old days, you know, KE2LO and the rest.
Yeah, a good antenna, efficient antenna, and high power, preferably both.
I actually stayed off the air for periods because I didn't want to annoy people with a yellowy signal, as WA1HLR would say.
What kind of a signal?
A yellowy, YELLOWLY. That's, I think, well, Kevin, you tell me what it is.
That's WA1HLR's term for something that's bad audio. You have yellowy audio, old man.
Yes, good old WA1HLR.
He has his own language. You came up to 40 over 9, Vic. Unbelievable.
Yes, he's up there in Skowhegan, Maine.
That's right. Skowhegan in the state of Maine.
He's the one that calls the FCC the FCC.
Indeed.
Your carbon microphonium sounds yellowy. I'm yellowified by it.
Yeah. Kevin, tell them about the missing sideband on AM, you know?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't like slop bucket. He tells everybody you're missing a sideband and a carrier. AM only, man.
Yes, the problem of the lost sideband.
Yeah. I love AM myself. I operate a lot of AM. And started out on AM and started out as a shortwave listener listening to AM. So I have a... I really enjoy the mode. But, you know, single sideband's okay too, especially with these new SDRs. You can sound just about as good as AM.
You know, Kevin, one experiment we should have tried tonight was AM.
Well, one of these days when you dare to retune your amplifier, whenever that may be, we'll go down in the AM window and we'll bowl them over with your massive signal in high fidelity.
Okay. It's a deal. How about you, Vic? Have you worked any AM in recent decades?
Right now, my transmit bandwidth is 4 kilohertz. I'm going right up to 4 kilohertz on the high end, and there's basically down to about 40 hertz on the low end, I think.
Okay, I just opened up my receiver so that I could catch the full fidelity.
I'm going to tune up. Let's see here. Oh. Well, I'm going to run conservatively on power. I'm on AM right now, too.
You were on AM? I wasn't even watching the fan adapter.
Yeah, I don't know how to set the drive. I'm keyed down and my output is zero. And I have the drive set at 22. I actually had it up to 76 for a moment, and I know that has to be too much. Oh, the microphone, by the way, is down to 19. Should it be up to 25? The default here is being 19.
No, you want the transmit profile, the AM transmit profile, to stay the same. Don't change anything. But when you're not on AM, though, all you did was change your transmit profile to an AM profile. You never switched modes.
That explains a lot. I have since corrected that error. My carrier is where it should be with a drive of 22. And you should be hearing me in high fidelity.
Yeah, you sound fine. However, we're a little close to the top end of 75 meters to be using AM, I think. Where your sideband might be going above 4 megahertz if you're not careful.
I know. I foresaw that, but a certain WEB4AIO did not provide me with a more narrow selection, but I can probably do that myself in the menu. Vic, did you tell anything, or your filter is wide enough to be able to tell the change in fidelity when I transmitted there?
Not really. Your signal is pretty crisp and clean to begin with, and so you're not really picking up too much by expanding the bandwidth.
Were you in the AM mode, though, when I transmitted, or were you in sideband?
Well, I tried listening in the AM mode, but on this receiver, your AM speech fidelity isn't too great.
Okay, we'll check into that, Kevin. Or it might be just Vic's radio, too.
It's probably my radio.
Yep, it's pretty... As the teenagers would say, awesome, this digital radio technology, this software-defined radio. I'm so glad that Kevin talked me into it. I was going to spend a lot of money having a special crystal company make for me yet another crystal for my FT-1000D, or crystals. I have Imrad in there now, which is a heck of a lot better than what the original Yasumucin ones were. And people on the LibertyNet even commented, my God, you have almost Vic-sounding type audio. But this company, I don't recall its name, it's over in the other computer, but the man there made custom filters for Barry Goldwater. What do you think of that?
Wow, a Goldwater filter.
Yep.
You can use those when you're up in Alaska, too, because it lets the water pass through and traps the gold.
Yes, it's a new form of panning.
It's an aurium gold mine.
Leaves only the nuggets of wisdom.
Yeah.
We need a filter like that on the LibertyNet.
Yes.
By the way, Vic, I had every intention to respond to your two emails, and I apologize. I had 2 days of very stressful interplay with the Federal Communications Commission, the cable TV people, and I finally now am able to respond, so I might as well respond to you over the air. Yes, there was not a lot of information that Des sent you that I think could be helpful here about beverage antennas, and in the article that was attached as a PDF, they were advocating placing the beverage antenna directly on the ground.
So I wondered what they meant by ground mounted. I mean, if you just place it on the ground, that's really not mounting it at all.
This is WB4AIO, the station with the golden tone.
Yes, and what I was referring to was the fact that in the W1WCR design here, we put an additional ground wire between the two ground rods. So if I ground mounted the wire that's say about 6 feet off the ground, 6 to 10 feet off the ground, I was thinking that I would have even a worse short circuit, so to speak. There wouldn't, you know, be much capture area there, and I think I'd even be worse off than their method, where the ground would be at least lossy.
Yes, that if you place the antenna right on the ground, you don't want an additional ground wire next to it. You just want lossy ground under the antenna, like sand, dry sand, or something like that.
Well, being on the Jersey Shore, we have an abundance of that. If you go below the topsoil, it is sand. There's a red soil referred to as being banker's run, whatever that means, but you can't grow anything in it. It's terrible. And finally, if you go a little lower, it's sand. And then if you go even lower, you have seashells. I wonder why.
Seashells. Well, I guess it must have been a bit moist there at one time.
Yes, further inland, about 270 miles where Kevin is, there's not a trace in the Appalachian Mountains of that. He has good hardy topsoil, then some clay, and then rocks. And the plant life there thrives. In fact, he has a totally different ecosystem there. Here, I miss the bunnies. I saw perhaps two in the last 20 years. I have a hunch it's because of the turkey vultures. But he has them there in abundance. He's up about 2,200 feet above sea level. I'm down about 200 feet above sea level, not quite. And there was one other thing he has that I miss. I forgot what it is, what animal. I guess robins. Yeah, I don't see robins out here at all. But where he lives, they're in abundance. And that's how it was when I was a child living out in that vicinity.
Yes, we've got robins up here.
That's nice. As a little kid, I used to watch them pull worms out of the ground. And I was a little bit fascinated by that. Although we do have other things here that didn't exist in the mountains of western Pennsylvania, you know, blueberry bushes and wild strawberry and a lot of other nice things. We can grow really world-class tomatoes too here, the soil. For some reason, tomatoes thrive, and farmers here grow them, and individuals do, with ease. And also soybeans, not to mention, like I said, the blueberry bogs, growing the blueberries. But you can grow your own tomatoes here, and they're good ones. You can do, say, heirloom. The varieties thereof that have thin skins and lots of juicy meatiness and great flavor, unlike the genetically modified ones in the supermarket that have tough skins to endure rigorous transport. Not to mention that they're picked green and then gassed with ethylene and bromide to artificially make them look red. I sure can taste the difference. N2IRJ.
Yes, results in it being called the Garden State.
Hey, what a coincidence. But it's an evil state in terms of the law in many, many ways. Since we're on farming, the subject, I think you might recall I said this on the Liberty Net about the farmer decades ago who got taxed on his vegetables. He proudly walked into court and said, "Nope, I don't owe any tax." Why? Because I grow tomatoes. Tomatoes are a fruit. And he's right. The scientists would back him up completely on that. But guess what? The judge, being a part of the regime, stated, "Well, the common man thinks it's a vegetable, so I'm finding you guilty. You have to pay the tax anyway."
Man.
Yes.
Well, maybe we need to have a separate set of laws for uncommon men. Maybe only the uncommon men should be allowed to make those laws.
Well, that would be a turn.
Isn't it a really far-out concept to believe in science and have science dictate what is reality? Oh, no. Man-made law. Is supreme. It reminds me of that black man who made the comment something about in response to someone else who said that we can't do that project because it breaks the laws of physics. And this black guy in, I don't know, some high governmental position says, who do we contact? Well, we'll just repeal that law.
Legislature in Indiana that changed the value of pi. Pi is an irrational number, so the legislature changed the value of pi to 3 1/7.
Oh my. Pi is a transcendental without resolution.
I think they should just change pi to 3. It would be a lot easier to figure things out in your head that way.
Just change it to 3.0.
As it is often stated, close enough for government work.
Calculations.
Sorry, I doubled with you, Kevin.
I just said it's much easier to do the calculations that way.
Yeah, and I said, as it's often stated, it's close enough for government work.
Think of how easy it would be to calculate the area of the circle.
Yeah.
That extra 0.14 of everything left over, and you could give that to the disenfranchised, underprivileged people, all the 0.14 stuff that was left over.
Yes, there you have it. It's an automatic tax that could be passed on to somebody else.
There you go.
Yeah. Today's kids in the government schools would applaud it because it's so much easier.
WB4AIO.
W1WCR.
And N2 IRJ. You know, Vic, speaking of challenges in school, for at least a decade, I've been getting sent report cards from Laura's cousin in Canada. And up there, they don't give grades anymore. They just write a small paragraph that the child has opportunities for improvement in this area or that area. And it's so vague because we mustn't hurt anyone's feelings. They are so politically correct up there.
Yes, the report card would read the child has shown some degree of cognitive ability.
For some, that's a real achievement.
You guys stated the same thing. Here's another thing that I came across accidentally about a week ago. One of Vic's possible pet peeves, you spoke about it on the Liberty Net, and that is the kids now, not the adults, but the kids are allowed to use any restroom they want, and it's in California. I came across it. I heard of this. We talked about it on Liberty Net, but the article I read said that it came into effect in California starting January 1st of this year. And in addition to that, there's, I don't know if it says warning, but notice. It said if you oppose this law, go to www.something and you can file your complaint in a petition. But that's the latest on that, Vic. Over.
What exactly does the law do?
What it does is it lets the boys go in the girls' room and the girls go in the boys' room.
Well, that should be interesting.
Yeah, it's been going on now for 4 months. I haven't heard any feedback, but it's apparently old news, actually. It started the 1st of this year, which we didn't know at the time when the Liberty Net people presented it. I think you foresaw Johnny or somebody being precocious and going into the girls' room. And need I explain more?
I think the next thing to do is to design all urinals to be unisex urinals.
Yes, that is possible. And I think I've seen one even. And maybe in other countries even, they do have that as a standard. And also, in my research for the Liberty Net, I came across other things. Sex change operations, and Kevin does not approve. But in his home city, his daughter is going to a school where it made the newspaper, I think, where a girl is going to be converted into a boy. And I came across something that I didn't know because I don't watch TV either, but Cher Bono's daughter, Chastity, is now Chaz. She had a sex change operation to become a boy.
Well, there's no such thing as a sex change. That's just a complete lie.
Can you touch that hot potato, Vic?
I mean, every single cell of your body carries the coding for your sex, and your sex is absolutely determined by your genetic coding, unless you're subject to some bizarre birth defects or injury. Or I guess you could say these people who mutilate themselves, they think they're changing their sex, but they're not. I mean, they haven't changed all the cells in their body. That would be impossible. There are as many cells in your body as there are stars in the Milky Way galaxy. It would take more time than has ever existed in the universe to change each one of those cells. So it's a total non-starter. It cannot happen.
Yes, it's total nonsense. But these people, I guess, haven't studied the chromosomes and how they determine sex.
Well,
I think these people actually hate nature. They hate nature and they want to deny nature, and they think that by cutting their bodies apart and just believing in crazy things that they can transcend nature. Just like a lot of, I guess, crazy religions of the past may have thought they could transcend nature by reciting a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but they couldn't, and these people can't either.
They sure make a mess of themselves trying.
Well, follow the money trail, as NAWGM would say, and the rest of us too. Kevin was sharp when I told him that I came across a sex change and facial reconstruction place in Philadelphia by accident. It was sort of a drive-in, drive-out. It's not even considered to be out of the ordinary. You know, come in, have your facelift, have sex change. In fact, we will take care of all the annoying details like hotel arrangements and flying in and all that. So I think the price is $20,000 per sex change at least, and this doctor does about $900 per year. So Kevin came up with a number. What was it, $2 million or something? Kevin, over?
Well, I do remember the conversation, but I don't remember the numbers. But the guy was bringing in multiple millions per year based on his disgusting practice.
Well, we could round it off to 1,000 patients instead of 900, and at $20,000 a piece, that's, let's see, what is that, Vic?
Say that again.
I think it's $20,000. He has roughly 1,000 patients per year with sex changes, charges $20,000 a piece. So 1,000 patients times 20,000, whatever number that is, that's what his profit is.
20 million.
Yeah.
Well, that's not all profit. He's probably got a lot of expenses.
I do realize that. After I said the word, I realized that was not the correct choice of words.
Probably a lot of lawsuits.
Yeah.
And probably has no conscience whatsoever.
Yeah.
But lots of money.
Yep.
What a sick toilet America has become.
Yes, it's getting worse.
Yep. We think that we sometimes depress you, Vic, but that's why we're advocating the fall of the regime. As ugly as it might be, and it'll hurt us all terribly because we're not connected financially, you name it. But we're beyond the tipping point. I mean, we cannot vote our way out of this anymore. The illegals, the non-white people, flock to the voting booths, and we're outnumbered. They will continue to vote Obama's in, and even worse.
Yes, only a financial collapse can drive a true change in this thing.
Right. Yeah, I do agree. When you said that earlier on other Liberty Nets, today I watched a video online of Putin. It was a good interview. And he stated at first that United States evolved into being a democracy, even though it is a constitutional republic. He said, in recent times, that has turned into an empire. And he wasn't shy about saying it. Hell, we've been saying that for decades on LibertyNet. And he said, any empire becomes insecure that it will be viewed as being weak. So, internationally, the United States has become a bit of a bully. And domestically, they have too. And it's just going to get worse because they can never let the public have the perception that they're weak. It's an ego trip. He didn't say that part, but you get the drift, Vic, N2IRJ.
Yes, it's headed down a slippery slope and probably out of control. And of course, the printing of money is totally out of control. It's just beyond belief what's happening. And it's having repercussions all over the world, but we've got this this problem with the Chinese. The Chinese hold a lot of the bad debt that we've generated, and on our side, we've got a currency that's rapidly losing its value. And I don't know who is screwing whom the most, the Chinese or us.
Yes. Yes, we do screw ourselves, don't we?
Yes, and of course it's the old old story of if I lend you $1 million and you can't pay it back, we're both bankrupt.
Oh, the woe it creates in me. Yeah. Putin also said other things that may or may not be in agreement with where you stand, but I'll say it anyway. Putin went back to the white people coming into the United States and asserted that one of the worst genetic cleansings in the history of mankind occurred there. And he also stated that his government would not have dropped the atomic bomb on Japan in 1945, but they might have done it in 1941. But he said that they were already winning and had the upper hand, and they have a different set of ethics than the United States.
Yes, I was amused by the North Korean take on Obama with respect to Obama belonging in a herd of monkeys.
Oh man, I didn't hear that. I want to hear it more in a second, but Kevin, you were there. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, this is Evan, KQ4CI, here in Quebec, Fort Charlie, India, Ashburn, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C.
I hear KK4TI in there, the WB4AIO here. Name is Kevin. Location in the Allegheny Mountains of Western PA. You're kind of weak at this location, Marty. Are you getting him any better than I?
Negative. This is Marty in Central New Jersey. I thought it was KQ4CI.
Roger. That's the correct call. Kilo, Quebec, 4, Germany, India, KQ4CI. My name's Evan, Echo Victor Alpha November, operating remote, Ashburn, Virginia. Over.
Well, fine business on that, Ashburn, Virginia. Kevin has lived a long time in Virginia, although he's now in western Pennsylvania. I'll let him go back to you and then pass it on to Vic, who's up in New Hampshire.
It's like Marty is getting you better than I am, but I know where you're located. That's my old stomping grounds. I used to live in Alexandria, Virginia, which is not all that far away from where you are, so... welcome to the group. Your signal is lower than I would expect, though, so perhaps you're not using an optimal antenna. Over.
Roger, station in Alexandria. This is Kilo, Quebec, Fort Charlie, India. Actually, that's really cool. You're even getting me there at all in Alexandria.
You're doing quite well up here in southern New Hampshire.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you for it. I'll be on the side.
Well... before you go, Evan, Kevin is actually not in Alexandria anymore. He's in western Pennsylvania near Beaverdale. So you're running remote, and maybe before you go, you could just mention the specifics of your station, the antenna, the height, all that. Are you in the wilderness, maybe?
Thank you. crude in Marconi. I mean, literally, I've got a tuner, and that wire goes through a wood wall, and it goes up to a military surplus mast, and that's what I'm doing.
How high is the mast, and you're saying that you only have ground as the counterpoise?
Actually, the counterpoise is impressive. It's actually a ground rod, and it goes back to a 290-foot tower.
290 feet? Where did you get that?
My company owns it.
There's a potential there. you load it right and get things handled, man, you could be a channel master on 160 meters.
You know, it's funny because I've never gotten anything to tune on 160 until I did it here. But what prompted me to do it, because I was kind of out of it, and I'm on the emergency response team on Adder Island. So, YL let me set up a system down there instead. And all it is, if I have an antenna tutor, is this wire. You know, you don't want to do this in a house because you got everything cleared away, but it goes through hardy plank or like plywood, and it goes right through that wall and up to about a 32 to 42 to 52 foot non-conductive hole. That's the important thing there. It's got to be non-conductive. And I'll tell you what, it does really good on DX and everything else.
Well, what does your company do? Or is it a tower company?
No, not really. My company's been my company. I started it in college. I'm going to date myself. It was Cisco. I actually did sound for Tim Turner in Columbia, Missouri. He was running for president, and I did the sound so that it could be outside of the Stevens Auditorium and put up some massive loudspeakers and plus played Bette Midler. He loved it.
Well, what I'm speaking to you on is a homebrew constructed of pieces courtesy of drunk drivers. My friend worked in the electric company, and when motorists would shear off a utility pole, he would give me the pieces, and along with some PVC sections, I have my LibertyNet antenna here. It's about 62 feet tall, ground-mounted, and that's what I'm talking to you on right now. But over 25 years, it's become wobbly and rickety, and the pole that I probably seek is made by Shakespeare, but I really don't know how to obtain another one and how much it would cost.
You know, here's a good idea. I could maybe help you. Marinas. There's lots of times those boat antennas, marinas, basically, and they're busted up, and you can glue those all together. Another idea would be PVC. You know, stuff you get at Home Depot.
Yes, my antenna is a combination of both because the drunk drivers relieved me of the whole length of the pole. So I don't have a full-length Shakespeare. Hey, Kevin, why don't you just mention him briefly about what you did with your TS-440S and hooking it up to a commercial station tower.
Ameritron ALS 500M and a MSJ 976. I will have to say it is mighty fine junk. The only reason this thing works is because I'm an electrical engineer and I rebuilt that. It did have nice capacitors and a roller inductor, but it's funny. People talk about MSJ and they say, oh, no, Kits didn't end with E-Kit. You know, they're still here with MFJ.
I do realize you're not using the TS-440S. Earlier, before you came on, there was KD8ASE. He was using that radio, and it's the same one that WB4AIO used to have. If you want to say anything, Kevin, fine. If not, pass it on over to Vic.
Roger. Let's pass it on over.
Are you there, Kevin?
I think the other guy's name is Kevin, too.
think it's Evan, E-V-E-N. KQ4CI, isn't your name Evan, E-V-E-N? Well, a little bit, but it's okay. Kevin doesn't have as good of a copy on you. Over to you, Kevin.
Oh, okay. Well, he thought you were saying Evan. I should get out of here, guys. I hate to get out of here because I love talking, especially to Vic, because it's a rare privilege. I don't get to do it too often, but my eyes are closing, and my daughter has to go to school real early, which means I have to get up at 5:30 in the morning. So, you know, that's only 4 hours and some minutes away from now, and I need to sleep. So, 73, nice to meet you, Evan, and nice to talk to you, Marty, and run everything through for a test of the flagship Saturday night station, and great to hear you, Vic. Really enjoyed the conversation. W1, WCR, and N2IRJ, and forgive me, I've forgotten Evan's call, but good night, Evan. This is WB4AIO. That's WB4 Aeschylus Icarus Oedipus saying 73, and good luck in the contest.
Yes, good night, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, Vic. Since Kevin's leaving, I will paraphrase. Because of his technical competence when he was working as a radio station engineer, their transmitter went offline and there's nothing they could do about it. They were off the air. So he modified his TS-440S, Kenwood, and transmitted in the medium frequency band and hooked up to their antenna. Nobody knew the difference for a week. And then they got it, you know, revived their transmitter and all was well. But it was really neat that he was able to pull that off. I think it might have been 1,000 watts. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask him sometime.
It must have kind of dropped the signal with just the 440.
Yeah, and I don't think he had amplification either. But at nighttime, what he did is worked 160, and he was the channel master with 100 watts because nobody had an antenna like that.
Yes, I guess he'd have a pretty blanketing signal.
Those were the good old days.
Do you guys have something in the background that sounds like chugga-da-chugga-da-chugga-da-chugga-da?
I'm not hearing it, but I think I know what it is. I think it's originating from between 4.5 and 4.6 megacycles. Kevin and I analyzed it, and it's three moving signals. And their combined spurs whittle all the way down to 4 megacycles and slightly enter the top end of the 75-meter band. We don't know what it is. I might try to investigate that. I'm currently dealing with the ARRL and the FCC, so maybe I could ask that question if they're willing to assist. Well, thank you very much. I try to maintain broadcast fidelity, even though my bandwidth isn't all that wide here in single sideband. But if I want to, I can switch over to this. And I'm not trying to sound like some maniacal contester, but if conditions degrade enough, I'm able to make changes here and pierce through. I don't know if you notice any difference in the sound quality or not. I'm in a different transmit bandwidth and also a different audio bandwidth. I'll go back to where I was. Okay, it probably doesn't sound as strong, but when conditions are right, it has better fidelity. Over.
I've actually got an old Icon 737 if the system is strong enough, it has a more natural voice quality. But I'm actually enjoying this here. I haven't worked 80 in quite a while, actually. It's just usually noisy, you know, and this and that. But it's really neat to be working it.
Roger. I'm going to pass it over to Vic, W1WCR. Any comment about my two settings, Vic? The average one, which I'm at now, the gentlemanly one, and then there's the more aggressive one that I demonstrated. Over.
Yes, I expanded my bandwidth to 6 kilohertz, and I could detect a slight increase in crispness.
Roger. I save it for staticky nights, but here, even though it's a staticky night, I'm still making it through in the gentlemanly mode. But yes, I could get more aggressive, and I will do that on Liberty Nets if need be. I have already done it once, at least.
Well, most people will be listening with a bandwidth that may be slightly less than 3 kilohertz. So if you expand your transmitted bandwidth, it might reduce the signal level in the lower 3 kilohertz.
Oh, of course, I'm spreading my energy over a wider place spectrum. I know, and you're right. In fact, you're the one who taught me that 20 some years ago. Some listeners are now listening to the LibertyNet in ESSB. I actually call it EESSB because I call it enhanced and extended single sideband. Those people enjoy hearing me at least in 4 kilohertz wide, and my decrease is only about 1 dB to the LibertyNet people. So it sounds really good to them, and the LibertyNet people don't know the difference. And it also helps defend against side swipers, so long as I get the frequency first. I don't play that game if someone's already there. I'm respectful. But anyway, if it's a clear day, propagation's good, Kevin and I can go out to, well, we could go out to 20 kilohertz if we wanted to, but our voice only carries up to about 10. So a good compromise seems to be around 7.5. It sounds better than a contemporary AM station, by far. And when conditions are agreeable to such, the slight lessening of the power, maybe 3 or 4 dB, isn't any big deal.
Okay, very good. So are you running at 7.5 kilohertz right now?
Negative. I'm right now at 4.0, 4,000 kilohertz. Your AM filter would tell you that, but your sideband wouldn't. And you're right, typical Japanese radios come with 2.4 KC or up to, say, 2.7 generally. It's in that range. You can get optional filters up to about 3,000, but after that you have to start entering the realm of software-defined radio.
Okay, I can expand this TS-870 to 6 kilohertz. And let's see, my steps are 6 kilohertz, 4.6 kilohertz, 3.4 kilohertz, 3.0 kilohertz, 2.8 kilohertz, and then on downward from that.
Well, that's probably the entire bandwidth. How much are you offset from F sub 0? You know, the 6 kilohertz might only mean that you're 3 KC on each side.
Understand the 3 kilohertz on the on each side.
Right, well, you're saying 6 kilohertz, and in AM they often refer to that as being the total bandwidth, not what either of the skirts are, either of the sidebands.
Okay, well, on the AM broadcast band, I think they tried to restrict their audio to 5 kilohertz because the channel spacing is 10.
That's correct. The shortwave broadcast is 5 kilohertz.
Yes, nowadays, especially if you have iBuzz, a.k.a. iBook. Right now I'm talking to you in 6 kilohertz bandwidth. So if you want to change your AM settings, Vic, to try to find out if you can appreciate some of my extra fidelity, go ahead and do so. And then I'll come back to where I was. Over.
Okay, well, I expanded my sideband bandwidth to 6 kilohertz. I don't see very much difference, maybe someone with a more sensitive ear would.
You sound a little more compressed than the other guy.
Are you talking about Vic? Roger, Vic knows about packing the most energy into the smallest sideband. Go ahead, Vic.
Yes, I believe in shrunken sideband propagation. Signal up here is beset with static. I can copy most of it, but not all.
How about the other thing?
I think we both need a repeat on that. The band did take a dive. Over to you, Evan. I think you said something about SDR.
You know what? The asphalt is out. Time to me to go back to station design. Thank you very much. It shows my station is working. KQ4CI, clear.
Yes, you suddenly came up. Your signal came way up.
Same here.
The amp faulted out.
That amp made all the difference. I perfectly copied you now.
Roger, roger. Hey, thanks, guys. Things are good. I have actually verified my work for tonight, and I'm going to go ahead and get that. Thanks for that. KQ4CI, 73, I'm clear.
73, Evan. Pleased to meet you, and we'll look for you again.
So, Vic, I'm back in the 3,000 hertz transmit profile. Let me convert to the more compressed version and find out if it's offensive anyway. Here goes. I'm now speaking to you in 3 kilohertz with not only a tighter sideband, but also more compression. Over.
Well, it certainly changes the quality of the audio.
Is it offensive or okay, or what comments might you have?
Frequency is being restricted. Does that put out a fairly square pass band?
It does. Much better than an analog. However, I would like to do even better, but it's beyond my technical capabilities. There's a man just south of me who's world famous. That's AC2IQ. He has invented a linearization circuit, and instead of the upper sideband, when I'm operating lower, being down, say, 25 dB or so initially, before it dies off all the more, he invented a circuit that at my QTH, I witnessed, when he turned it on, he immediately fell off the cliff to negative 40 dB. And at his QTH, with his scope and all, where the signal was stronger, he could see better, you know, because it was below my noise floor. He was actually 51 dB, negative 51 dB, after the F sub zero point on the upper sideband. Unbelievable. And if you go to QRZ.com and look up AC2IQ, you can see the circuit there for my radio. It's specifically designed for my radio, the software-defined radio Flex 5000A. You have to cut circuit traces, and it's not an easy thing to do, but I'm telling you, what a difference does it make. It's not that it looks pretty on the panoramic adapter. That's nice, but what's really excellent is that it focuses your energy in the passband of where you are. And I would have never believed the difference. I thought the guy sounded great on his SDR. The radio that I'm using right now is Flex 5000A. when he kicked on his linearization circuit, holy hell, I couldn't believe the difference. And of course, his lower sideband was improved too. And finally, he improved the intermodulation distortion. And when you added it all together, it's a really sought-after circuit. He has an ugly construction one on his website, but you know, everybody who cares about high-tech radio is after him. I sent him an email, and I haven't heard back. That was maybe 6 months ago. He's getting probably inundated so much, people wanting his circuit. But one day, about maybe 8 months ago, I was in CUSO with Kevin on 3.666 kilohertz. He broke in, and he stated, "My God, you two guys know what you're doing. Your audio is great." And coming from him, that's a great compliment. And to IRJ. Back to you, Vic.
Yes, he sounds like the top guru.
Yeah, in this realm at least. Yeah, you ought to go to AC2IQ on KiraZ.com, and you'll see all of the things he's done. He made magnetic loop antennas, you know, like three times the size of his automobile, and mounted them on top of his tower. And when you go there, you'll see all the things that he did, and you'll probably be impressed.
Yes, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I was very flattered that he stumbled upon Kevin and I and congratulated us, so. I'm running commercial radio station equipment here. Vern would be proud. Although it's not probably really fully evident when I'm on the Liberty Net because we're restricted, you know, in sideband and all that stuff. But for the people who do have the radios that can decode it, I have to admit I've really gotten positive press.
It certainly sounds good.
Thank you. Yeah, the CWID just went off. This is N2IRJ. And I had something else that I did want to speak to you about. It's eluding me at the moment. So I'll say something else. And that is, as you know, I ordered my life extension. I feel a hell of a lot better. That 10-year experiment, which I didn't want to do, but I needed to prove to myself that it really was making a difference. Well, guess what? It does make a difference. I'm feeling more and more like my old self, and as soon as I'm well enough to combine exercise, I'm really going to turn back the clock. God forbid I try something like TA-65. I was going to tell you that I was reading an article this past week about surgery, and I suspect this is old hat, and they did it with Sue, but basically to prevent blood clots, they were putting air pressure stents, well, you know, I don't know what they're called, but they encapsulate the legs and squeeze them during surgery. But they also said in the article that they inject heparin so that the blood doesn't clot and create a stroke. But I'm not sure if that was really correct, because I thought it was warfarin that they put in, you know, rat poison. But maybe not. Maybe that would make it too non-coagulative. Over.
Yes, I'm not sure what the relation is between heparin and warfarin, but I always thought them to be sister drugs.
Oh, okay. Then maybe the article was correct. I didn't research it enough to, you know, to look up heparin or anything.
I don't know if, heparin probably came into existence because warfarin has either a patent that expired or maybe never had a patent for that matter, so they can come along with a slightly different molecule, then they can patent it, and then they can rake in on the exclusivity.
Yes. Yes, as you know, I co-interviewed Joel Karsten, excuse me, yeah, Karsten, K-A-R-S-T-E-N, author of Straw Bale Gardening on the Survival Net. And I asked him the question about genetically modified seeds, and even though he said he didn't want to die on a hillside for the cause, he said, we're going to reap what we sow. Both literally and figuratively.
Yes, if you sow genetically modified seeds, then you're going to get genetically modified plants. Unless something has changed.
Did you listen in at all? If not, I could send you the link.
Yes, it might be interesting to look at it. I wonder if if these plants have telomeres on their chromosomes.
You know, had we had more time, I would have asked him, and he might have been able to answer. He's no hayseed, so to speak. He was a smart, well-educated man, very articulate. Oh, good. Well, I can still send you the link. It's an abridged version. I still have, of course, the director's cut. You might have already heard that, though, if you tuned in early enough or late enough.
Yes, incidentally, I am using DA65 now.
Oh, yeah, you did tell me that. And congratulations. I wonder, I mean, is it really possible to increase the telomere length? I mean, it's just, it's amazing to me. You know, it's sort of like the, what is it, xanthanin or something like that that you say gets rid of your accommodation problem. I mean, I'm going to order that, but for years I didn't because I thought that it couldn't possibly work. It's been around for so long. And yet, if you go to any eye doctor, ophthalmologist even, they say that once your lens has, once it has hardened, and anybody over 40 has that, there's no reversing it.
It's too bad that, as far as they're concerned, as far as their field of knowledge is concerned, they're right. But that's only because they don't understand what has happened recently.
Well, I'm going to go for it, boy. I think that's a miracle molecule. I think also that it might not be stated, but I think that it's not going to be limited to reversing the lens problem of cross-linking damage. I think that it's going to have to also have some positive effect systemically, even though it's not advertised as doing such.
Well, actually, now it is being advertised for doing things systemically. And I heard an ad on AM radio. They're selling astaxanthin to smooth out wrinkles in the skin of older people.
Well, I was living under a rock. I didn't know that. All the more reason to consume astaxanthin, and maybe more than 6 milligrams even. Or have you discovered that there is a point of diminishing returns and you can't get any better payback?
No, I haven't time to experiment like that. That would be an extremely long-term experiment. So I haven't done anything like that. But I simply use it in the same way that the people were using it when they discovered that it could solve the ice accommodation problems. And it's too bad that MDs don't understand that the lens of the eye apparently is not permanently frozen by the aging process. It can be apparently made flexible again by long-term astaxanthin use.
You know, I don't expect you to know this, but I'll ask anyway. Do you have any idea what the molecule is, you know, or anything? Like, for example, I think sodium thiopental has a sulfur molecule, whereas, you know, so-called pentothal. And the modern version, at least 20 years ago, was called Brevetol, where it was a similar molecule without the sulfur. And I'm just wondering, what makes this anthraxanthin, or whatever it's called, work?
I have no idea. In fact, I've never looked at the molecule. Maybe if I tried looking it up, I could have a look at the molecule, and it might tell me something or other.
Roger, one of my teachers years ago said, oh yeah, you want to get the sulfur out, so the Brevetol was allegedly better, but I don't know if that's true, because if you're interested in liver protection, you'll consume N-acetylcysteine, which is a sulfur-containing amino acid.
Which amino is that?
N-acetylcysteine, what's used to reverse acetaminophen poisoning.
Yes, I use that here.
Yes, so do I. And it works. I've had the blood tests to prove it.
Yes, a lot of these things seem to work rather well. And it's amazing to me that that they're selling the astaxanthin as a wrinkle remover. I guess they're selling it to women mostly who want to rejuvenize rejuvenize the way they look by smoothing out wrinkles. And they give a money back guarantee and give you the whole sales hype. And I think they also were selling or were giving away free bottles of it if you wanted to try it. And I think you had to pay maybe $5 or so for the postage. But anyway, they're pushing it, and it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
Yes. The mainstream medical community is in for a rude awakening if enough people discover it. Astaxanthin. Do you purchase yours from the Life Extension Foundation or elsewhere?
Well, I can buy it cheaper at iHerb.
Mm-hmm. And it's the same quality figure?
It certainly seems to work. And then, of course, you've got the cataract problem, which is solved by carnosine.
I didn't know that. Being without my Life Extension magazine for 10 years put me in the dark ages.
Yes, well, if you want to reverse your cataracts, if you have onset cataracts, it takes a while, but you do maybe 500 milligrams a day of carnosine, L-carnosine actually, and the halos around the lamps at night shrink in diameter.
Wow, that's going to be a part of my regimen. I'm destined to have them. My parents did, and my grandparents, so if you know your genetic weaknesses, that's where you focus your life extension focal point. You know, as for the helping the liver with N-acetylcysteine, also recommended by Life Extension, I know this is old news, is Silymarin and then Silibinin and then the combination, which they now have from Germany, which is just called milk thistle extract. I confused that when I was interviewing Karsten on the Survival Net about Straw Bale Gardens, and he corrected me. I said, as a little kid, I used to taste this white milk coming out of a plant, and it was actually milkweed rather than milk thistle. He wasn't really familiar with the milk thistle, but milkweed he certainly knew about.
Yes, is the milk from the milkweed plant palatable?
As a little kid, in small doses, it seemed to be. He claims that if I would have consumed too much, I'd have gotten an upset stomach and maybe thrown up, but it wouldn't have killed me.
Actually, it would have given you the whim wings.
Little kids like to put things in their mouths. When I was a really little kid, before first grade, I used to wander through my grandmother's flower garden. And I can't recall if the flower was a zinnia or if it was a black-eyed Susan. But one of them, before emerging, you know, the petals, they would have this ball with high-pressure liquid, clear liquid, like water. And I used to go around and open them up and drink the dew from them. And it never hurt me, seemingly. I don't know. I think it was probably a hydrous complex that was needed for the plant, but I tested and found that the plants that I milked, so to speak, weren't harmed in any way, ever. So they really didn't need that. So I don't know what it was. Are you familiar with black-eyed Susans or zinnias? You might know. But like I said, I was before first grade when I did that, and I've never investigated it since then.
No, I'm totally unfamiliar with that. The only bad plant experience I ever had was once I crunched into some jack-in-the-pulpit berries. When the jack-in-the-pulpit matures, it has a it almost looks like a raspberry. And I made the mistake of biting into that, and caused indescribable pain for several days.
I never knew about that. Never heard of it. What kind of pain? Muscular, just sickness, flu-like symptoms? What did it do?
No, the burning pain in your mouth. It was really, really pervasive, and I couldn't. I tried washing my mouth out, and I didn't swallow any of the stuff. I just sort of bit into it. But juice came out of it created a tremendously irritated sensation in the mouth, so bad that I could hardly sleep.
Wow. It was probably for other reasons than pH, but do you think it might have been acidic or alkaline too?
No, I think there was some complex molecule in there that did some big time damage. But the only reason I bit into it is because I had read somewhere that the Indians cooked those berries and used them for food.
I wonder if it's true or if you need to cook them to somehow change their chemical state.
Yes, probably if you cook them, it changes the chemical composition and maybe renders the toxicity such that it's not going to cause you problems.
It reminds me a little bit of what I reported on the Liberty Net about that girl who goes to the Amazon rainforest, I think Peru specifically, to obtain ayahuasca. And it's the same situation there where they have to boil it and boil it and then combine it with another plant that is a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, because the human body has a protection mechanism, the blood-brain barrier. And if you just take the one plant, nothing happens. But if you take the two plants, the other plant breaks down the ability of the blood-brain barrier to prevent the other drug from getting in, and then it all works out the way they want.
And what does this do?
It gives you an LSD-type trip, but according to them, I'm doing it an injustice by stating that. They said it's much better than LSD, and it's you're more in touch with reality as opposed to when you're on LSD. Lysergic acid diethylamide.
And what are the after effects and the side effects?
They say it's a spiritual journey, and it's all about the journey. And they have shaman involved sometimes. You do have to have a friend to watch over you. The one girl ended up taking a shower with her clothes on, and that's just a laughable case. Worse things could happen. Long term, I don't know, but I think I have a good suspicion. The girl actually produces YouTube videos showing herself in altered states, days later, actually. And in one video, she says, look at my pupils. It's been 3 days, and they're still dilated so badly, you almost can't see the blue.
Sounds like it's dangerous stuff.
Yeah, that sounds to me a little bit like scopolamine. I don't the deadly nightshade and what they do in Colombia. They'll refine it, make it into a powder, and then have it in their hand, and then blow it in an unsuspecting victim's face. And it's so powerful in that concentration that the smallest amount inhaled through the nasal cavity makes the person totally vulnerable to suggestion. In one case, the person was told to go upstairs and give them everything, and that's exactly what happened. And the next day or two, the person came to his senses and asked neighbor in the apartment there, where did everything go? What happened? He said, well, you carried your own furniture out. I thought that you wanted it to happen. The guy had no recollection. You mean I really did that? I can't believe it. And yeah, you're very open to suggestion, and you're still conscious, and other people can manipulate you. And I saw on YouTube one interview of a South American woman who wasn't very nice. She blew it into the face of an elderly woman, and the elderly woman dropped dead of a heart attack.
Yes, it sounds like this is a major hazard. I wonder if it's going to become popular in this country.
I don't know. I can say that an even more ugly thing possibly is that crocodile stuff from Russia. Oh my God, it has gasoline as one of its components, and you inject that and you basically cause necrosis inside your body, and they end up amputating people's limbs, and it's really, really, really upsetting.
Yes, I've read brief reports on crocodile, and that's also, it's probably even worse than ayahuasca.
Yeah, I'm surprised you got the pronunciation right, because I still can't spell it. Something like A-U-Y-A-U-S-C-A, but don't quote me on ayahuasca. It's also known as an other name in Colombia. It's a four-letter word with an accent on the end. I think I did say it on LibertyNet, but I sort of forgot it, like tempeh or something. That's not it, but it's something along those lines. I could look it up if you ever want to know.
No, I'm not sure I really want to know.
I have a my really decent friend who lives in the Andes Mountains of Colombia. It's HK3ZOR, Harry Mariner. His father was a well-known and respected author in the 40s and 50s in the realm of amateur radio. He published articles, and, you know, Harry is sought for the works of his father. For example, one person asked if he could have his CW key. And I don't know if you ever heard of him or not, but he is kind of world famous. Harry himself and his father lived near a famous writer who produced many novels, and the movies were made from the novels, and they lived in La Jolla, California, which is an expensive place, upper class. Trying to think of the name of the author. Maybe in a few go-arounds I'll remember. Have you ever heard of Mariner in any writings back in those days? And if not, that's okay too.
I've heard of the ancient Mariner, but I don't think I've heard of these Mariners.
Yes. Well, he spells his name with two R's. but anyway, he's a gentleman farmer. He escaped the United States decades ago when he was denied a very high-level job because, due to so-called affirmative action, they put a black man ahead of him, and he said, "That's it. I'm out of here." And he established his own life in the Andes Mountains, and he's been happy ever since. And he also was at the time married to a high-level person. His wife was vice president of Bluebird Bus Lines, so I probably don't need to expand upon that. They definitely had their financial house in order. Into IRJ.
Yes, they were free to go where they pleased.
Yes. Chandler, Raymond Chandler, that's the name of the writer from La Jolla, California.
Millions of writers of whom I have never heard.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was there too until Kevin introduced me, and then secondarily Harry, HK3ZOR. He has an American call sign too.
He's got an FCC call sign?
Yeah, both. He has a Colombian call sign, HK3ZOR, and he has an American call sign, JEG. Let me look it up. I'll tell you, it is, while I'm looking for it, let me say this, that my signal and your signal reach Colombia on a regular basis, and he can hear the Liberty Net on his 20-meter antenna. It's a beam antenna. Really doesn't matter much how it's pointed. And it's definitely a very poor antenna for receiving us. And yet our signals are powerful enough to make it to Colombia on a regular basis. I'm looking here. I see his name. Here it is. His American call sign, KA6JEG. That sort of confirms his origin being California being six land, at least back in those days.
Okay, it sounds like he's retained his American citizenship.
Yeah, I think he did, and it really puts him through the ringer on income tax. Just as you tell me about the woes, he really has the woes, and he really detests it. They have their tentacles into him, something like as an international interest citizen or something like that, under some clause, and he has to file in both places, and it's hell, especially since he, for decades, was chairman, or on the board at least, of a company called Pharrell. They make plastic and molded injection parts for Mazda automobiles and any other car maker. He was largely supplying Mazda cars, and they were being exported to Venezuela, maybe? It's Hugo Chavez where he was. And then he got shut down. But the point is, he had his assets. He had a portfolio. And man, between the IRS and the South American conflicts between political opponents, dictators, and all that, it made his life miserable.
Yes, I can't understand why he would move to Colombia and not abrogate his U.S. passport to get away from the IRS.
I will ask him that and let you know.
There's been a growing wave of people turning in their American passports so that they would no longer become U.S. subjects.
Yes, I had that very discussion with one of Harry's friends in England, and I told him that he was a damn subject, and he didn't like it. Under the crown. I told him that I'm a free man. Yeah, in my head, I guess. I don't know if you've picked up on this, but many a liberty that I've stated, we don't have any rights. We only have temporary privileges. Oh, yeah, I really endorse the idea of having rights. I want them. They're self-serving. Human beings benefit a lot from having them. But their governments don't see it that way. It's a battle for power. Especially like Putin said, right now we're in an empire state, which I've said for years. And we can't compromise the ego of that state and have freedom.
Yes, the noose is being constricted tighter and tighter around our necks, it seems, with all the freedoms being lost. And of course the FATCA is going to come into effect on July the 1st. And that will cut off our ability to open foreign bank accounts and to do a lot of foreign financial dealings. I guess the big multinational corporations will be able to function quite handily, but U.S. individuals, I think, are going to have an exceptionally difficult time.
Wow, we need to talk about that again on the Liberty Net in detail. Along with what you introduced a couple months ago about internet control possibly changing.
Yes, they're still working on that. I think with the internet, though, they're going to run into a hornet's nest. And I think with the election coming up, they don't want to stir up the hornet's nest too badly right now. There are people on the internet that resent this NSA horseshit and all the other government crap that they're trying to foist off on us.
So in that interview with Putin that I spoke of, that I watched, Snowden came up, and Putin's response was, he didn't tell us anything more than what we already knew. I don't know if that was a politically correct statement to cover themselves, or if it was really true. What do you think?
I have no idea.
Well, I'll say one thing. The American public didn't know, so it's a good thing. I'm really glad. I'm a Snowden supporter. I wish there were more.
Yes, it always pays to know as much as you possibly can know. And certainly Snowden opened a huge can of worms.
Yes. Well, I did remember finally the other item I wanted to discuss with you. That is, there were three threats to the LibertyNet, and fortunately, I have eliminated one of the three interference sources in the neighborhood. Actually, I should credit my wife and to JTT, because after an email exchange with a Haitian individual who didn't get it, my wife finally went over there without my knowledge and raised holy heck. And that very day, the interference stopped. The guy claims he did nothing. Although previously in an email, he was saying, yeah, I know I have a bad wall outlet and I'm going to replace it this weekend. Of course, that's idiotic. A bad wall outlet doesn't cause the kind of interference I was receiving. It was some kind of radio generating device that replicated itself every 60,000 hertz, birdies. And being my next door neighbor, boy, did I have signal strength working against me. So that has been fixed for about 6 months. And I really think that it will stay that way, although there's complete denial that he did anything. Kevin and I took a shortwave radio and actually traced it to his house and the exact wire coming out of the house. It might have been re-radiated. We're not saying that it was that exact wire, but we would have needed to go inside of his home to make further analysis, and he didn't want that. Although he did, in writing, give me permission to transverse his property. Originally, I was going to blame the neighbor on the other side of the street. I used my beverage antenna to determine the direction. And that's what led me to the next case, which is one Karen Scanlon on 3 Sugar Maple Court. I live on 22 Bittersweet, but her polluting signal is so bad that I can't deal with it. If we change LibertyNet frequency very much, I'm going to be unable to hear. So even though she's that far away, west of me, action needs to be taken. She's causing harmful interference. So I had to go through an extensive vetting process, maybe you would call it, to prove to the ARRL that I had a legitimate case, submitting my technical data and everything else. And if and only if they give their blessing, will they send their sacred letter, which they finally did. But there are delay periods, 30 days, 45, blah, 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 to make sure that if a court case ever comes up, that the offender had enough time to respond. Well, I understand that it's back to the laws. So finally, this person did not comply, and it's been going on for about 6 months, and I've been through letters and people showing up at my door, namely the cable TV company, unannounced, because she's been trying to shift the blame. It's really her Samsung television that's at fault. And that has been abundantly verified by me and Kevin, too. He was here, too, as a witness to what she said. She originally tried blaming it on her ex-husband. She said, well, he bought the TV and he mounted it on the wall, so nobody can come after me. Go after him. At this juncture, the FCC has officially declared that I have a legal umbrella of protection from them, and this Scanlon cannot sue me, even though in general anybody can be sued for anything. They just won't prevail, but they're telling me it can't be, and I'll read you that in a moment, what my email says from yesterday from the FCC. But anyway, let me read you the last sentence of the letter that they sent her last week. And again, they keep increasing in amplitude. It starts with the ARRL just suggesting, but now it's because of the cooperative agreement with the FCC, it's now directly the FCC. The league is uninvolved. It's directly with Gettysburg FCC. It says, please advise this office and Mr. Fenwick as to what steps you are taking to locate and correct this reported interference problem. The Commission expects that most cases can be resolved within 30 days of the time they are first reported. Please direct your correspondence to the following address, 1270 Fairfield Road, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, 17325. Sincerely, Laura L. Smith, Esquire, Special Counsel, Enforcement Bureau, CC to the Philadelphia Field Office and the Northeast Regional Director. On the next go-around, I'll explain a bit more. N2IRJ.
Okay, sounds like you've got a very hostile neighborhood.
Yep, unfortunately. I didn't want it to be this way. But the woman is now trying to deflect the blame. Not her husband, but she's blaming the cable company. It wasn't known to me until a few days ago, but she called them twice, and they came out and performed their investigation, and they stated that the problem is your TV set. It's not our system. But guess what? A few days ago, they came out for the third time, and this time they rapped at my door, and they said, what are you complaining about? And I said, the frequency. And I told them how to locate it on their so-called frequency analyzer, which it exactly really wasn't, I found out. And I can tell you exactly what it was, how I can give you a link. It's called a Sniffer Sleuth 2, trademark by ComSonics. And the problem is, when they went there, they couldn't go down low enough in frequency. It's their device stop at 22 megacycles, 22 megahertz, and my problem is down around 4. So guess what? They couldn't help me. And they were nice, though, and I was nice to them. And they do want to help. They want to vindicate themselves. And in doing so, by combining our forces, we can help each other against this bad neighbor. And I have 2 points listed here in my email to the FCC explaining that the reason the cable company couldn't help is doing so would reach beyond the scope of their obligations as defined by Part 76 and 320B of the New Jersey Bureau of Public Utilities. Namely, their primary legal duty is to protect domestic VHF aircraft frequencies between 135 to 139.25 megahertz. They still recognize and honor their legal obligations to abide by CLI standards, that's cumulative leakage index, for protecting amateur radio and other VHF licensed services. And then, as I told you before, number two, their equipment cannot detect frequencies below 22 megahertz. And we're talking about near 4 megahertz. So that's the story there. I did hook up with a really competent man finally in the technical department, and he'll work with me. But anyway, like I said, he said that in their records it shows that now it's the third time. And it's really annoying to them because of her trying to shift the blame onto them. So what we have to do is do a countdown. I received a letter from the FCC yesterday, an email saying that we have to wait for it to run its course. We have to give 30 days per the law for her to respond, at which time now she is ordered to respond in writing to the FCC and me. And theoretically, if she doesn't, I am told that she can be given up to a $4,000 fine for not responding to a FCC official inquiry. It's reached that level. It's been going on so long. Also, this email that I received from the FCC states, quote, she can't file harassment suit if the federal government has ruled that her Part 15 device is causing interference. And we have. So this is the legal umbrella of protection I was speaking of, whereby her threats against me naturally have no merit, but according to the FCC, she can't even sue. She can't do anything against me now that they've taken the baton from me, the FCC, and to IRJ.
Okay, very good. That's a complicated case, I guess. And it sounds like you've been taking a lot of time and pain to go after it.
Correct. Anything that threatens the Liberty Net threatens me.
Yes, and also I think it threatens amateur radio in general to allow precedents like that to run loose.
It does. There's one other case, which I could send you, in Washington State where somebody like this just wouldn't cooperate. And it was over a lighting fixture. It's still going on. It's over a year old. It started before I initiated this case. And that person acted the same way that my neighbor is acting. And it kept escalating and escalating. They gave the $4,000 fine. And then they gave an $11,000 fine. And then it's to the point where now they're allowed to give $16,000 per day fine. And the person still isn't responding or complying. They had two on-site visits with the FCC vehicle, and the engineers came out and, you know, verified everything. So the next step is to issue a warrant for the person's arrest from a federal judge, at which time they'll do the handcuffing, the so-called forfeiture of the TV, or the lighting fixture in that case, you know, which is permanent confiscation, and then the person has to pay bail money to get out of jail and then go to a federal court appearance. And it's really a no-win situation for someone to go down that road. It's better to just unplug the damn lighting fixture. And by the way, these manufacturers know that they're not producing products which are Part 15 compliant ever since the law changed. So they're pretty pliable to deal with. You can tell them, oh, I have a bad one. And for customer relations, and mainly to prevent the FCC from getting on their backs, they'll give you a new one or a one that's even better and more expensive at no charge. They're aware of the scam they're pulling. And they figure, oh, here and there, a few times we'll get caught. But in the big picture, we're selling so many million products, we're still way in the black. And the few people who complain won't hurt us a bit.
Yes, and the fact that the manufacturers are usually offshore somewhere makes it particularly difficult.
Well, that topic came up too. Early on in the game, we tried to have this neighbor work with us and tell us what is the FCC ID on the rear, and we could never get an answer. And I'm looking here to bring up an attachment from the FCC so I can read it to you directly about that situation. And it says, as soon as I find it, please also be advised that some of these devices are imported and do not comply with commission certification standards and thereby result in interference to other radio services. You may have one of those devices. If the device is an approved one, it should have a silver FCC label on the unit showing a certification number. In bold print, even an approved device, however, can only be operated legally if it is not causing harmful interference to a licensed radio service. The device can also be defective, resulting in a shock or fire hazard.
Like you need some kind of a engineering analysis.
Well, that's what's yet to come if the neighbor doesn't cooperate. After enough days pass so that it's legally allowable, the next step will be to prod her more for a written response. Again, they want everything in writing. Nothing is verbal. Puts me through a lot of emails and time wasted, but it's for a good cause. But the point is this, they will send out the Enforcement Bureau, in theory, eventually, you know, the engineers and so forth, the agents, and instead of driving an undercover Buick as they used to, they're now using an undercover Chevrolet Tahoe, and it even has a license plate the same as what an ordinary citizen would have. Instead of saying on it U.S. government, it's somehow registered in a way to not have that designation. Finally, it has darkened windows, and in the back there's $1 million worth of electronic equipment. The roof has been removed. It's no longer metal. They replaced it with a radio transparent composite plastic-like substance, and inside they have mounted antennas. One is a direction finding. It has four elements at 90 degrees to each other, and I guess by virtue of the timing and phase and all that, their computers can tell where a signal is coming from. It can be act as a homing device to trace signals. But anyway, what they do is instead of allowing this clear top, which is visibly different than the metal too, they paint it to match the color of the vehicle. So from the outside, the vehicle looks totally normal. So no one would suspect that it's a surveillance vehicle. That's what they will bring to my neighborhood. Over.
I have no idea.
And to IRJ. I know of somebody who got visited by the Buick and they ruined his day. So that's all I knew about that vehicle. But they don't use it anymore. It's this newer one.
Does this vehicle bristle with antennas?
Negative. Not a single antenna on the outside. There's no giveaway.
Okay, so it's a complete stealth vehicle.
Yes, stealth is a good word. That's exactly what it is. You're not the only one. I don't want to lure them here either. You know, all this, what I'm going through, getting them in my neighborhood, I mean, it could be a double-edged sword, if you know what I mean. Although, technically, they have no reason to bother me. But it can make me nervous. That's why my CW ID has to be so perfect.
That sounds like they're rather strong-headed about these things.
Only if you step-by-step play the game. By the way, earlier you might have heard me mentioning to one of the breaking stations about the so-called clicking noise on this end of the band. It really isn't a click. It's really, as far as Kevin and I have determined, three separate sweeping signals intersecting to form a clicking sound. It's sort of like the way WWV generates their tick-tock. I think there it's actually four different sweeping signals, and to the human ear it sounds like the ticking of a clock. Well, that's what's coming onto us out of band, which I don't like. Some nights on 3995 during the net, it's bothersome, and a lot of people hear it all over the country. It's powerful, whatever it is. And it's emanating from between 4.5 and 4.6 megacycles.
Strongly up here, but occasionally there is some weird interference on this frequency.
Roger. Speaking of weird interference, if we go down band too far, like where we used to be on 3950, on 3955 is the BBC taking up 10 kilocycles of bandwidth with Digital Radio Mondial, Buzz City. It's awful. And then further up, there's another one, and then there's another one. There are about three different ones between our frequency here and 3950 now.
Yes, I'm appalled by the fact that these guys can operate freely in this band.
I agree. I want them to be kicked out. They made a little bit of a positive change up on 40 meters. I think 100,000 hertz worth. Yeah, they moved up the stations, and the original plan was to move down the amateur radio operators by 100,000 hertz, and then there would be no crossover anymore. But that never happened. They only did half of it. And I guess, really, I would say, let us stay where we are and just have them go away.
Yes, that's a good philosophy. Who listens to this digital BBC stuff, anyway?
The only people who are able are in the target audiences, which are local. Even though they claim it's worldwide, it is not. I have the sophistication here to decode Digital Radio Mondial, and I have tried. And only under the most rare atmospheric conditions am I able to do so. Sometimes I have a 30 decibel level. I mean, it is strong. Stronger even than some BBC broadcasts back in the analog days, which were easily receivable by me here. But guess what? 30 dB anymore doesn't matter. Why? Because of several things. You have to have the proper signal-to-noise ratio. But that's not bad enough. And it has to be a really great signal-to-noise ratio, far more than what we deal with in the analog world. I mean, really, big time. The other thing is the phasing. Because of selective fading, the slightest timing error puts it out of synchronization, and it's not possible to lock on, and you're screwed. Now, next, Doppler shift, that comes into play. And once again, the slightest deviation, and you are screwed. And finally, there are a few other factors that enter into it, and I have, on occasion, received beautiful transmissions, but only for short periods of time. Most of the time, the atmosphere says no. So locally, they're hearing it, but in terms of over the pond and the rest of the world, forget it. It's a great lie. It is not worldwide. Digital Radio Mondial, French for worldwide. It is not. People in South America, in the jungle, who used to be able to enjoy easily hearing the BBC, cannot anymore because of Digital Radio Mondial. That's who's listening. The local people, and they're polluting the rest of the world just that they can have that locally. It in its close range, near field, it's higher fidelity. And for example, the 10 kilohertz bandwidth can actually support, through compression algorithms, 13 kilohertz of audio, which the Germans do. They're smart. If you listen to Radio Nigeria, they're just the opposite. To this day, they occupy 10 kilohertz of bandwidth to only transmit 3 kilohertz of audio, which is so stupid. N2IRJ.
Well, they're a backward country, and if you want to operate as a backward country, you have to do things like that.
Yeah, they're actually the inverse of the Germans. It's so hilarious. And it just goes on year after year. I mean, I think the only way that will be corrected is if they call a white man who invented DRM and pay him to fix what's ever going on over in Nigeria. But I don't think they even know that something needs to be fixed.
Yes, they don't have to spend money on it if they don't know.
Well, they already dropped a big chunk to buy that DRM equipment.
Yeah, and how many DRM receivers are there around the world?
In my opinion, virtually none, at least stateside. The only reason I have the ability is because I have a PC hooked up to a software-defined radio, and even then I had to go through gymnastics to download software, and there are various versions. Some work better than others, and you really have to fight it every inch of the way. I suppose there's another possibility. There might be sold, I guess, certain radios that have that all incorporated, maybe, but you have to pay a lot of money and you're limited and you have to go by their rules, and whereas in my case I can do whatever I want and I like it that way. So anyway, we're stuck with that, and we're also stuck with IBOC. I don't know if you know about that on the AM band. They've ruined AM radio. Al has talked about this over time, and what I did is I took a screenshot. Hell, I could send it to you if you want, of WOR New York. They're transmitting it. Basically, instead of being going out like they used to, you know, 10 kilohertz bandwidth, they restrict themselves to 5, and they sound almost telephonic. And then there's a 5 kc separation, and then there's another 5 kc rectangular block, rectangle, on the noise floor, above the noise floor, and that's the digital signal on the upper and lower sideband, beyond it actually. And the damn insult is that it's bad enough that they've ruined their own audio in the interests of entertaining this IBOC in band on channel, which nobody has a radio, virtually nobody has a radio to receive it. My car doesn't. New cars don't come with it. They might even make you pay to have it. I don't know. But anyway, the point is, because it extends so far out, they're actually invading the space of the adjacent radio station. In other words, 710WOR, they're screwing over 700 and they're screwing over 720. They're actually entering their passband. So the FCC juggles it so the other station is far enough away, in theory, so the two won't interfere. But there's actually this damn overlapping going on. You're actually being attacked from another station. Years ago, that would have never been allowed. N2IRJ.
Yes, it's amazing what's going on.
Yeah, so when you talk on LibertyNet about all these problems, I mean, everywhere you turn, there's a problem. It's overwhelming.
Yes, it takes tough people to do this stuff.
Agreed. I do, and the rest of the neighborhood at large watches the boob tube and sports. That's their protection mechanism.
Form of oblivion.
Precisely.
Anyway, I've got to shut this thing down and get some sleep.
Well, I was hoping you would come by, and you did. Very nice, QSO. Thanks, Vic. Again, tell Sue I'm totally there in spirit. Love her, and I want her back to enjoy excellent health. And I still remember her pies and wonderful conversations. So with that, 73 N2IRJ clear.
That's very good. I think, let's see, did you receive my last email?
I believe you might be referring to the one where she had nosebleeds, over?
Yes, she was massively over-medicated, and we reduced all that stuff and got rid of all the medications that had bleeding as their side effect.
Has anyone explained to you about the cancer becoming necrotic tissue, and how does the body deal with that in terms of excreting it, or does it require a secondary debulking procedure?
What is the question again?
The question is, with chemotherapy, it's going to kill the cancer cells, and where do they go? How does the body absorb them and excrete them? Or does it require secondary debulking surgery?
No, it requires no debulking surgery. The dead cancer cells are apparently assimilated and expelled. I presume that it's the same process that gets rid of normal cells that have died.
Roger. Yeah, normal cells actually go cancerous, and if your immune system is healthy, it automatically takes care of them before they can multiply and be fruitful.
Yes, that's probably true, and there are some new immunology-based anti-cancer drugs that are on the horizon. And we may be able to take part in the test or the trials of one of those.
Oh, yeah. You all spoke of the FANG program. Is the FDA still blocking? There's no way you can get it transported to New Hampshire. You'd have to get it on an airplane to Texas. My God, that is a killer vision when someone is so sick.
Yes, it is daunting, to say the least. Got to get out of here, and we'll pass along the Big 7 and the Little 3 before I fall asleep here.
Big 7, Big 3 to you. And to IRJ, clearing out again. Good night. Good morning.
Yes, good night all around from W1WCR.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Oh, I sure am.